Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 99. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
Doing well, Dave. 99 not out.
Yeah.
Doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're doing well.
We're up there with old Shane Warne, 99 not out.
Exactly. Another cricket reference. Good to see you're making the cricket references for once, Stu.
Yeah. Welcome. You're welcome.
This kicking off episode 99, one before 100, we're doing Cloak and Dagger. So mark that down as, again, I've done what I said I would do at the start of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Having
said that, I did remind you literally 10 seconds before we went on air and wrote it down in front of you.
Doesn't matter.
And I had to write it down in
good.
Front of you.
That's the kind of service I'm liking to see, you know, is being supplied now by you.
Yeah, I'm aware of the limited capacity of my co-host. Good. That's
that's a very mean thing to say. Now, I want to kick this podcast off. I mean, Stuart, I normally consider myself, if not a superior human, definitely top caliber. In the last 24...
That's an opinion.
I'm going to issue a signal apology to a member of the loony bin. I may have gone a little bit hard on the loony bin last night, Stuart. It's happened before.
Why does it not surprise me
that
you've just picked an internet fight with someone?
It's been 2 years. Since my last internet.
Oh, it hasn't been 2 years.
Well, it feels like 2 years.
It's been nowhere near 2 years.
It feels like 2 years.
It's been like 6 months.
2 years of innocence. 2 years of no playing out. Like, haven't sort of, like, got involved in any squabbles. Limited my sarcastic remarks. Well, last night Michelle was away.
You seemingly saved them all up for me and work. That's what you've...
Yeah, yeah. I didn't say...
You're venting in other areas now. I've noticed that.
Completely stopped.
No, and you've then, just stopped it on the internet.
Yeah. And then Michelle was away last night and, you know, I had like 5 minutes to myself and couldn't help myself, got involved. In a normal situation where I escalated straight to red alert, or straight to nuclear war, off what some might consider a small... You know,
well, go on, let's hear this apology. Let's hear...
You know, I'm issuing an apology to a member of the loony bin.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, let's hear it. Let's...
Well, I
want to hear this sincere apology.
Well, I've said I'm sorry.
That's it?
I'm issuing an apology to Rich and Tusa from the loony bin for being a bit, you know, overboard in my strident in my opinions and mockery of him.
Right. If you laugh your way through an apology, that's not an apology.
I'm trying to be
this
sincere.
This is poor, Dave.
I'm trying to be sincere.
Poor.
No, I love the loony bin. I love those guys. I love Rick. So, you know, no harm, no foul. You know, words were spoken, mostly by me. And, you know, it's a brand new day. I mean, who wants to hold on to the grudges of yesterday? Not me.
Because you're on the...
Yeah.
You're the one coming out looking terrible from all those drugs.
Oh, I don't know if I'm looking terrible. No. It was a minor scuffle on the playground. But like, I thought, like, part of my new mantra in 2019 is to be kind of more karmic and more at peace. And I had to go to yoga afterwards, and it was troubling me during meditation. You know, meditation short as well, so it didn't trouble me for too long, but it did trouble me. And I mean, I'm trying to become the best human being I can be, Stu. So, you know. I can one day probably ascend to godhood. I mean, something like that. Ascension.
I'm just going to pretend you don't exist.
Yeah, well, anyway. You can pretend I didn't exist.
Yeah.
Well, you can.
If you ascend to godhood, my position as atheist is 100% confirmed.
That's fine. Now, in other news, outside of petty squabbles on the internet from me, I'm reading Starman and classic World War II Justice Society. And here's a comment I made to... I've got a teaser later on for an announcement later on this show. But I made a comment to Adam the Computer Crouch. If I die, I want to die having read it about Starman. Like, Adam the Computer Crouch is 100% on board. We've got some big announcements I'll be announcing later in the show. But, you know, what did you like that comment, Stu? I basically said to Adam, I said, enough fucking around, Adam. Like, enough bullshitting around the topic. I want to finish this Starman. And if I die, I want to die with it on my gravestone saying, has read Starman to its entirety. Including specials and one-shots.
I like that you're prioritizing these things.
Including specials and one-shots.
Yeah, yeah, well done. Thank well you. Done, Dave.
Thank you.
Let the signal down in almost every other scenario, but I'm glad that you're picking up on something that no one's ever asked you to do, that you're doing for your own just sick shits and giggles.
Well, I don't.
Meanwhile, everything else is just
this is a good faith that it's
chaos around this signal.
No, definitely not.
Really?
Apart from chaos.
Right, well, I'm just going to write in a little news item here.
Sure, you can write it right away.
Which,
Punisher?
Yeah.
Punisher season 2 came out. I'm fully up to date spoiler wise.
By saying that. You mean you haven't seen it?
I haven't quite finished
it. And you read some wiki pages.
I didn't read wiki pages. I haven't quite finished episode 10 because I had a very busy weekend with our dog Cooper, who's a puppy, who I'm the sole parent of this weekend because Michelle's away.
What about last weekend, Dave? Because we have had weekend? 2 weekends.
Okay. Well, I don't know what. Who can remember what was
happening? We've, in fact, had 10 full days. How many episodes have you watched?
I've watched 10.
2.
Almost 10.
You've watched 2 in the last 10 days.
I watched both of them last night, and I was a little bit tired, so I couldn't quite get to the end of episode 10, but I did.
And this is your show as well. This is your favourite Marvel character.
Yeah.
True. And you're just letting everybody down.
Well, okay, but like, let's cut to the chase. I found, and now I don't know, part of this is on me. I am bad at shows when they get kind of into like the last third. I do quit on a lot of shows in the last third. I find the last third drains a lot of energy from the show and me, and often I can do without it. Like, guess what? I've never seen the last episode of Buffy or Angel. I know what happens. Okay. I watched almost every other episode, but I got towards the end, I was like, you know what? I just can't be bothered. And then I'm like, oh, I'll watch it on download, I'll watch it on DVD. I haven't done it. I mean, I know what happens.
I mean, you're not making godhood with this attitude. You're not getting there with that attitude. That's poor, Dave.
Maybe a god of apathy.
That's poor.
Could I be the god of apathy?
God of sloth, maybe.
God of sloth? I'd love to be the god of sloth. The god of sloth is the best god. Anyway.
Really? Really? That's the best for you?
Well, I'm sure he has a good time. He has nice little sleeps. Yeah, look, I mean, I found a lot that episodes 8... The last, I went to watch the end of episode 8 and episode 9 and most of 10. I found it a bit of a slog, I'll be honest. Like, John Bernthal, very good. This Billy Russo storyline's dragging out. Like, it feels like it could go 50 more episodes. Like, the progression is so slow in that storyline. Like, Dane Lamont says it does end well. The show.
See, I was hoping you'd have watched it because we needed a positive review here. Because this show it went downhill. The last half is worse than the first half.
Well, I didn't enjoy episodes 9.
There's a couple of moments where Jon Bernthal's performance wasn't good.
Mm. Well,
like,
so far
he was the only thing holding the show together, and he has scenes where it's like he was drunk on set.
Well, he is very when he goes big as Punisher, which he hasn't for a lot of the show. He goes real big.
It's just this show has been a giant letdown.
Really?
Yes. There were no great character moments. There was no great story arc.
I found Billy. Did you find Billy Russo was stretched out too long?
I wasn't a huge fan of the way he was written. Same as his therapist.
I mean, far be it for me to be PC, but I've got a feeling that like there will be people kicking up about how the therapist was done in today's world. You know, it felt like that was a little kind of like. I don't know. It just didn't seem very Psych 101 to me. And I just... Something didn't ring true about that performance and characterization to me.
None of it did. There was very little in this...
Yeah.
Honestly, the entire show that was great.
Well, I mean, look, I've enjoyed the show, but I did find the last couple a bit sloggy. But I, as I said, have a concentration problem when I get towards the latter half of these things.
You've just got a concentration problem.
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm the best judge of this one. I'm going to come back in refreshed. I need a couple of days to recharge. I've got a lot going on.
All right. So Dave will have his Punisher 2 review ready, hot, fresh off the take for episode 143, the rate we're going, 144.
I thought what a way to bring up the 100,
by doing what you should have done in 98. Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah,
well done.
Thanks.
I'm sure everyone's going to really appreciate
like,
waiting
1 thing I'm not doing,
waiting 2 weeks one thing for I'm you not to
doing,
catch up.
One thing I'm not doing is hopping on the hype train. I'm taking my own time. I'm working my way through it. Very strategic, very deep thinking on this one.
Which is fine. Which is totally fine. Okay. If you hadn't told everyone in the week, first week, I'll watch it all by next week. I'll have a review for you, my fans. Tune in every week to hear my opinion on this topic.
Well, you've watched it. So
I will wait a whole month.
What for?
For you to watch it.
Oh, who cares? Look, you've reviewed it. You've given it what I feel is a very predictable review. Can I be honest? Like,
that's why I was saying I needed you to be there.
10, what are you giving it? Because right now I'm giving it a 7.
I'm down to a 4. This
4 out of 10.
It got worse.
Jesus.
The fact that you gave up on Punisher is all the review anyone else needs. The most diehard Punisher fan ever met.
My problem isn't
gave up on Punisher. My problem isn't
the character of Punisher. I find the storyline a bit boring around him, not him. I find like his scenes. That Russo therapist thing killed me. I was like, if I have to do one more scene with these two idiots, I just, and like Russo's gang of like little thieves, I just can't stand those guys. They did start to bring John Pilgrim back into it, which I find more interesting.
Oh, that's the worst ending to any story ever.
Really? Dane Lamont says at the end hits full Punisher, like for the last 30 seconds or something. I don't know what.
Quite literally, the last 30 seconds is him walking into a warehouse and just unloading two clips into a crowd of like teenagers.
Really?
And screaming while he does it. And then that's it. It goes to black and that's the end.
Really?
And that scene comes out of nowhere.
What do you mean by teenagers? Like teenagers?
Well, I mean people aged between about 15 and 18. Yeah, but
give me all context. Are they like drug dealers or something?
Oh, they're in a gang maybe, or they're doing a deal.
So Frank's just like...
It's literally a scene out of nowhere. There's no setup.
Okay.
He just walks into a warehouse.
A drug den.
And just starts shooting. And screaming. And then it cuts to black. And you're like, okay, that was... The most interesting 30 seconds of the entire show, and it came from nowhere.
Interesting.
So, not interesting, poor. Poor is how I would describe it. The writers went, oh shit, we've just done 13 episodes where Frank doesn't do what Frank always does.
Yeah.
Was he
doing that shouting when he was doing it?
Yes.
Like, good.
Let's just tack that on in the final scene, just so the fans have something to cling on to desperately. It was... Just poorly managed.
We're all clinging onto something, whether that's sanity, you know, or whatever. I'll tell you what, there's a funny comment made on the internet the other day. Someone was complaining. I think it was one of Ray's co-hosts from, he does The Last Sons of Krypton. And someone said something or other, and he was saying how hot it was. And someone said, like, just be glad you don't have bushfires. He said, I could also have cancer and no feet. And I was just like out of nowhere, and I responded like, don't forget the earth's going to crash into the sun and nothing matters anyway, so and then laughs were had. I mean, so we're all hanging on somehow, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's Frank Castle in a fucking basement with a gun to his head chewing tobacco, that's what it is.
Where are you going with this?
I'm just pointing out to you, like, don't forget, like, there's a lot of fucking angles, man.
You're right. Let's just turn off the show. Go home. Nobody cares anyway. Let's just give up on life, right?
No, don't give up.
The Signal Suicide Pact starting now. Is that what you're saying?
I've got another 100 in me. I've got another 100 in me for
mate,
sure.
Mate, that's pushing it, isn't it?
No, definitely not.
I've got 100 in me, but I don't know if sitting this close to you is healthy for me mentally.
Well, I just wanted to kind of give a glimpse beneath the curtain. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes
Curtain back where it was.
It's happy-go-lucky, and I'm laughing, but, like, don't forget, like, there are bigger fucking things at stake. Like, Frank, when he unloads on those teenage gang members, who knows what's going through his head? I mean, it'd be interesting to know. If he had the interior monologue going, it'd be kind of interesting. Anyway, turning to the Avengers Endgame teaser trailer, Adam the Computer alluded this to me, it was during Super Bowl.
It was, and happy Super Bowl Sunday to those in America watching.
Indeed. I believe the New England Patriots won.
Patriots did win 13-3.
A low-scoring contest.
Yeah, and what has been described as the most boring Super Bowl of all time.
Was there only one touchdown? That's what I heard. Someone saying the lift. I don't know if that's the case. I guess there must have been.
Sounds about right, yeah.
But was it described as the most boring?
Yeah.
Really? A low-scoring
Like, even
game.
The commentators at the end,
yeah.
Like, when they're normally celebrating glitter cannons, they just went, and that's the end of Super Bowl 53. And that was it.
Like, that's a wrap.
Yeah. And we're finally done.
One thing I can do without is listening to the controversy over the halftime show that it comes across every year now. Like, that's something I'm tired of. Like, will Maroon 5, like, take a knee? Tune in for later. It's like, that's been going on for, like, the last 3 weeks. And that's been, I'd describe, quite dull itself. Much like Maroon 5. You know, dull is how I would describe their entire catalogue of work. Outside of one song I like, what is the song? The Jagger one? That's the only good song I can think of that they've
ever done. Oh, God, that's a terrible
song. Like, it's not even good. I know, but, like, it's the one song.
That's one of their worst songs. What do you want about
it? I find they've got, like, a lot of terrible songs. Like, when you're like, Maroon 5 are going to play Super Bowl, I'm like, Jesus, for how long? Like, it's not like fucking when Tom Petty played or Bruce Springsteen or something. Like, you know, Gods played. Maroon 5, you're like, really? This is the best we could do? Anyway.
You've got a weird taste, though. You can't...
Oh, come on, Tom Petty? He gave a great Super Bowl show. I mean, you know, like, plenty of good people. Remember Katy Perry with the sharks? Like, she had the funny sharks that were bopping in those dances or bopping around in the background. Like, at least it was comedic. But then you get Maroon 5 and it's like, Jesus Christ, like, are we just trying to, like, be as bland as possible?
Okay, Dave's got an irrational hatred of Maroon 5.
I've never liked
them. Who knew that?
I've never enjoyed their
music. There's a fun fact for those listening at home.
I've never enjoyed their music. But anyway, turning to the fucking teaser trailer, take us through it, Stuart, and what did you think?
So it's only like 40 seconds long. It is a teaser in every sense.
Yes.
We did finally get to see Iron Man and Nebula on the ship kind of repairing...
Mm-hmm.
So they are together. There were kind of rumors that maybe Nebula escaped somehow and was floating through space.
Do you remember my rumor that Rocket Raccoon came?
Yeah, that didn't happen. Because he's safely on Earth in the team.
Yeah, true.
We see him walking through Avengers HQ.
That's kind of cool, but he's with the Avengers and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. That's kind of a nod to, like, in the comics and stuff. You know, like, that's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, what were they going to do? Like, they're in Wakanda and everyone's, like, turned to ash. What, are they just going to leave the talking raccoon with a giant gun there?
No, definitely not. He's one of the most popular characters.
Exactly. So, yeah,
Nebula's helping Tony Stark.
Well, we see the two of them, like, trying to repair something.
Mm-hmm.
Tony's, you know, singlet and goggles,
sure,
reminiscent of Iron Man 1.
Yes.
Which I thought was a nice touch.
Back that to was basics.
Yeah.
We see Steve was kind of talking, like, you had the feeling like it was kind of a desolate world, wasn't it? Like, you know,
there is a bit of a focus on Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
Just as, like, there's just a subtle few more scenes with him.
Mm.
He's the only voiceover as well this time around,
yeah,
whereas Tony was the only voiceover previously.
And Steve is kind of almost depressed sounding, isn't he?
Yeah, but it is starting to feel like a goodbye to him.
Sure.
And the fact that he's strapped on that shield, like, as the final
shield,
time for the end.
School. Yeah.
Yeah, not the magnetic returning shield.
And he saw some Jeremy Renner in there, I saw.
Yeah, pretty much all of the confirmed alive Avengers were there.
Is Black Widow alive?
Yep, she was in the shooting range.
She was, yeah. Okay.
The only other one that's of note was Ant-Man and Rhodey were standing in the same room.
That looked good when they did there, both through the costume.
Yeah, but it means that clearly that shot was taken from after the whole time travel-y bit.
Mm. Yeah, I'm kind of confused, like, with what's going on with the time travel. It hasn't really been explained. Like, there was, in the previous trailer, there was things like where they thought potentially that was back in the 80s that he was at.
Well, the date's written on the screen, yeah.
Do you think that's 100%, though, or you think that could be the Russo brothers playing tricks?
Oh, it could very well be Marvel changing it. Like, they changed a lot.
Yeah.
And you can't take a lot of character details from the trailers.
No.
I mean, famously for the last couple of movies, Thor has had anywhere from one to two eyes at any one time.
Yeah.
And that's been entirely unreliable.
Mm.
The number and the colour of gems in the Infinity Gauntlet was changed in every scene.
Alive? Thor's alive, isn't he? He's not part of the snap.
No, and he's in this trailer. He's kind of walking out with his cape billowing. And
man, to be honest, I found it a bit of a downbeat teaser, but I'm really looking forward to the movie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was a teaser in the true sense where you're like, yeah, okay, there's not a lot of details, more of a movie.
Well, I kind of feel like they're still in that down mode.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel will come and go in the next month and two.
Like, sure.
It's really getting close now.
When is it?
It is... March. Yeah, March.
So it's almost here. And that's going to be huge, dude. Like, I mean, I'm genuinely excited for that movie.
In fact, we may even get early screenings the end of February.
Wow. And we're in for
it. I know. Like, it's getting really close. I think...
Jeepers creepers.
It's kind of snuck up on most people.
If you get an invite from Hugh, can you plus one me?
No. No.
What?
I don't want you ruining my time with Hugh. That's...
But I've got so many questions.
I'll send you a text. How about that?
It'll be like on... it'd be like when Mark Hamill was on Just Shoot Me, and he's like, is it really a ranch, Skywalker Ranch? Is it really a ranch? That's how it ended. I don't know. I just feel... By the way, I've got a point of order for you.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah.
Two or three shows ago, you...
When you promised to finish...
You lobbed a little right? bombshell that Hugh had this movie that had come along called The Front Runner.
Yeah.
The Gary Hart thing. Well, it's only about to open now, so I haven't missed it. I'm looking forward to it, but it's just getting released now. Like, it's... Like, their screen is out now, but the movie is only just opening in Australia, like, now. Like, it's getting advertised, like, this week. So...
No, it's been out for a while now.
No, The Front Runner has not been out for a while. I'm telling you, it had been released, like, this week. It's not been, like, 6 months out or something. I was like, I've not heard of this
movie. Let me put it this way. My mother saw it a month ago.
Really?
And she is not the early ticket lineup kind of person.
Well, it's still out in cinemas. I know that for a fact. I'm actually interested in the storyline. Gary Hart, I remember well his election campaign and how it sort of faltered with the affair. I'd definitely watch Hugh Jackman in that. I think it actually sounds like a pretty good movie. What did your mother think of it?
Not Hugh Jackman's best movie.
No? Okay.
She wasn't a fan.
She's a big Hugh fan, isn't she?
Great. I mean, she enjoyed Showman and Les Mis a lot.
Yeah.
Not a comic book fan, so
no.
Nothing... Like, but not aware of, like, the X-Men franchise.
Sure.
Other than in name.
Sure. Okay. But not his best work.
No. Okay. No. But, I mean, it could be not her movie.
To me, it's a streamer. Like, it's not something I'm going out to cinemas to see.
No, I wouldn't be lining up for opening night.
No, sorry, Hugh.
For it. But then, I think I've probably got a pretty similar view to me, which is movie is going to be pretty pro-America. Which is fine in doses, but I don't need to see any propaganda again.
It's not really propaganda. Like, the story of Gary Hart, a failed presidential candidate who had an affair with his secretary.
Yeah.
Well, it's not really pro-America. It's the downfall
it's gonna
of
be.
A...
It's going to be. If you want to put money on it, it's going to be pro-America.
There'll be some flag-waving, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story
but that takes away from the movie for me.
Well, he's a presidential
candidate. And I imagine it's pretty similar to Mom.
He's a presidential candidate, though, Stu.
Yeah, he's Dave, you're not listening. Shut up for a second. It's not about the story. It's just that's not what appeals to me.
All right.
It's kind of like how I think Punisher is the worst Marvel character of all time.
Why did you bother see it then if she's anti-American? What would you, like, I don't know.
It's a Hugh Jackman film.
Fair enough. Well, anyway, I will...
What else do you need to see a movie?
I will check it out when it comes out on streaming. I am interested, because I actually found... I followed the story. I remember the story breaking back in the 80s. Because he was literally, as the thing says, he was the front runner, and then his campaign completely fell apart. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was the 88 presidential campaign. So it was the one that George Bush Sr. won. And he was the Democratic candidate, Gary Hart, who then fell apart, and I forget who George Bush Sr. actually beat, but it wasn't him, because he never got to polling day. Anyway, now...
So, I mean, look, just wrapping up this Avengers Endgame, while the trailer came out, Marvel also announced that they're pushing up the release date in the UK, so UK will get a Thursday release, April 25.
What are we?
We're the same.
Okay.
We're normally a few days earlier. Mm-hmm. Just by lieu of, we have movies released in Australia every Thursday.
Yep.
Whereas in the States, it tends to be a Friday release.
Gotcha.
We're a day in front anyway, so we kind of get that.
So it's not a week later in the States, like it is sometimes. It's just a day. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be pretty close.
Cool.
Pretty That's close good. Worldwide, but yeah. The UK is now officially up to April 25.
Okay.
Captain Marvel, I think, is in the first week in March.
Do you think you'll see it, Stu, in cinemas?
I'm reasonably sure.
You're reasonably sure, yeah. I mean, come on.
Unless, you know, it's raining or something.
It's a big fucking year this year in terms of big movies. Like, we've got, obviously, Captain Marvel, Avengers Endgame, and you've got Episode 9, you know? Just that itself, before you go anywhere further. Like, huge.
And that's just Marvel.
That's just Marvel Disney. Yeah, I know. That's just the surface of what's coming out. It's going to be a massive year. Now, Stu, you introduced me to the Hobbs and Shaw trailer, the spin-off from Fast and the Furious, starring The Rock and Jason Statham.
So, Fast and Furious, I think they're up to...
I don't know.
Nine. This will be the ninth Fast and Furious franchise movie.
It's crazy.
Hobbs and Shaw spinning off, so that's The Rock's character and Jason Statham's character.
Both of whom were in previous Fast and Furiouses, yeah.
Yeah, The Rock's been in everyone since, I think, five or six. Jason Statham was introduced in 7 and 8, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, he's been around for a while.
He's been in a couple. Yeah. His brother was the villain back in 6 or 7.
Right, okay.
And he was kind of introduced at the end of the movie.
No, and he's good. And it's good to see him back in, like, a main sort of a co-lead role, you know? Like... I don't know, I'm looking forward to this movie. The trailer is great.
Can the I trailer say that? Is fantastic,
like,
isn't it?
Like, I didn't have that much... I'm not, like, a Fast and Furious diehard, although I enjoy them. I know you like your cars, Stu, so you probably like them more than me.
I love the Fast and Furious franchise.
I
mean,
look, I enjoy them, and they certainly have gotten better over the last few, but this trailer really kind of caught my attention.
Yeah, yeah. This is bringing the comedy.
Yes.
It's heavily focused on the whole... odd couple, dynamic duo.
Of course, yeah.
They're playing off the Lethal Weapon kind of template.
Where you've got the straight man,
the law, with the Rock, and then you've got the kind of unorthodox Maverick showing up in Jason Statham. It's not going to be a good movie. Let's get that out of the way. There is no great Fast and Furious movie.
No, but it could be enjoyable.
It's going to be enjoyable as hell if you can switch your brain off and you can enjoy fast cars, one-liners, and explosions. This is going to be a hell of a good, fun movie for a few hours.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what it's built to do. It is never going to win an Oscar for Best Picture. It is
and neither should it. Like,
no, exactly right. It's not trying to be a great film. No. So no, it's not a good movie.
I liked Idris Elba in the trailer.
Yeah, playing like a superhuman kind of villain.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was very cool.
I think there's huge... Like, it was a very, very good trailer. I would expect this will do very well. Like, frankly, I'll be surprised.
It's going to do massive numbers. Yeah. Massive numbers.
It's amazing what they've done with this franchise. Like, for a franchise that early on was running out of heat, they have completely retooled it and really made such a success of it.
Because one was almost a cult hit.
Yeah, I remember it. It was a long time ago as well.
Yeah, and then it started sliding downhill. Yeah. Two was worse than one, but still watchable.
Well, after Tokyo Drift, there was question
marks. Tokyo Drift was terrible.
But there was question marks over whether it would continue, you know, after that movie.
Then in 4, they kind of had a little bit of an uptick. And then 5, they brought The Rock in.
Yeah.
And the franchise has just boomed.
No, it's...
this will be easily a $1 billion movie.
Which is amazing.
Pushing towards 1.5. Like, it's going to be monstrous.
Isn't that? You know what it reminds me of in terms of trajectory? How they managed to retool Mission Impossible. Similar sort of stuff.
Yeah, although I don't think Mission Impossible had the down of...
No, it didn't have
the Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, no, Tokyo Drift was really was a flop, I think, from memory. Like,
In Tokyo Drift, they ditched Vin Diesel as one of the lead.
Mistake. Yeah.
And they ditched Paul Walker in that movie as well. Like, they didn't have any of the leads.
It felt like the stakes were completely gone, you know. Like, they were struggling. Like, it was almost direct-to-DVD, you know?
Yeah. Whereas in Mission Impossible, at least they've always had the bank of having Tom Cruise in it.
True.
And that's a draw card in pretty much every film.
And Mission Impossible had time. They took a long time between 2 and 3.
You know, they did.
A long time. Like, and then they came back with that. JJ, it caught fire at the box office, and then the next one was just intensely huge. It's just interesting to me. I like when it's a good skill to be able to retool a franchise midstream and keep it, make it more popular, which is definitely what Fast and the Furious did.
It's incredibly hard to do. There aren't many franchises that have done it.
It's very rare. And
it's by bringing in a massive star and then having an incredible marketing campaign.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of what they did.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. Now, Stu, we've already covered Punisher Season 2. I don't think I've got anything more to add.
You didn't have anything to add in the first place, Dave.
I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. Are you seriously giving it a 4?
Watch it.
Okay.
Watch it and tell me if your review is still a 7.
Okay. Well, I feel like one of those points may just punish your loyalty. Like, I was struggling through episode 9 or 10, let me tell you. I was really struggling. And
doesn't get much better.
Jesus.
There's a brief glimpse of hope in Karen Page showing up.
Oh, I fully Wikipedia'd but her full. I've got the full lowdown on her scene.
And she had quite a nice scene, especially with the.
She's barefoot.
The guy in the morgue.
Did you know that? She's barefoot in the scene. People were mentioning on Reddit for some reason.
Watch it, Dave. It's actually a part of the story.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Oh, Jesus. I thought I'd lobby with that comment. Some people were sort
don't,
of...
Don't talk about things you don't know, Dave.
Some people were lobbying you're information.
You're just showing your ignorance now.
Sometimes I'm just a conduit of information.
You're a massive conduit, Dave. I said it last week. I'll say it again.
Thank you. I take that as a compliment.
You're a massive conduit.
And the way you say it, I don't like. The way you the way you say it, I don't like how
take
you
it
say
any way you like, Dave.
Well, I don't like it. Anyway, I've got some big news, okay, about... this was actually supposed to be lead news, but it was overcooked by the Avengers Endgame teaser trailer. Affleck is out as Batman, sets a June 2021 release date. There was an official announcement from Warners on the release of several films. To kick off with, the first is the newly announced DC Super Pets with Jared Stern and Sam Levine will helm. That project deals with the pets of a number of DC superheroes teaming up to form their own crime-fighting team. The Matt Reeves-directed The Batman is the most high-profile announcement, with a June 25, 2021 release date being earmarked. In addition, Warners has finally confirmed Affleck will not be returning to play the Caped Crusader. Affleck also tweeted out that he's looking forward to seeing Matt Reeves' vision. And then as well, Warner Brothers wants a familiar face for Batman, and Matt Reeves wants a very specific age for The Batman, and the story's leaked that apparently two actors already, one was rejected for being too young... one was rejected for being too old. He wants it within about a 5-year gap. No revelations over exactly what age that is, but apparently he's being quite specific. James Gunn is confirmed to direct The Suicide Squad, being touted as a soft reboot. The James Gunn penned and directed movie will open August 26, 2021, so not very long after The Batman. And so that news came out in a clump with a Warner's sort of release date series of movies, and I mean... The reaction on the internet has been very positive. I think it's good that they've finally made a decision on the Affleck situation and Matt Reeves is moving. I mean, to me, that's huge.
Yeah, there's some great news here and there's some kind of troubling news here. So
what troubles you, Stu?
The most troubling thing for me is that James Gunn is directing The Suicide Squad.
Well, he was always going to. That was highly
but the fact that they're effectively wiping the first one...
It's interesting, isn't it?
That worries me a little bit. And I'm not sure what they're doing with this franchise.
Apparently anymore. He wants to have his own cast. It doesn't mean people won't return. Like, I think the chances of Harley Quinn are very high.
Harley's in it. We know Harley's in it, and we know it's Margot Robbie.
And probably...
She's in the Birds of Prey. We've got more news on that later in the show. But, like, we know that character and that... actress playing it is alive and well. Nothing's changing there.
Mm.
And it's a massive draw card for Warner.
Sure, huge.
So the fact that he's like soft rebooting a movie that's 1.5 years old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why not call it Suicide Squad 2? That's kind of what I'm
saying. I would have run the sequel. I don't understand.
Or they do the thing they do now, Suicide Squad .. You know, insert title, hell to pay, whatever. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, look, that's the news that as it's released. I mean, titles aside, I am looking forward to James Gunn's vision on Suicide Squad. I mean, personally, I think you can only go up. I liked bits and pieces of the original movie, but overall it was a bit of a hot mess. Although I did enjoy her performance and bits of the movie, I think overall, structurally, it was kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, it was. Will Smith was great. I'd like to see him come back.
I hope so too. I would think, again, a decent chance of coming back. Oh, maybe two you need.
This does feel like Warner's is basically scrapping what they had.
Well, I think
and starting fresh.
But that's
part of it. Like, you can't have the Suicide Squad set after Suicide Squad if Batman is younger, because Batman was in Suicide Squad.
Well, there's a lot of... This is the other part of the equation. There's still no confirmation on what Batman is doing, whether it was just a recast or whether it will be in the past. There's absolutely no confirmation on any of this, other than it's going to be a noir-driven story. That's all the information we have. We have a release date. Even the Affleck stepping away, even that was softly dealt with. It wasn't.
Well,
like,
put it this way. Bookies were paying out people that bet that Affleck would not be Batman.
Oh, but so they should. Yeah, so they should.
So it's released enough that the bookies are now paying out that bet.
No, it is. Yeah, but I mean, the details are still very, very sketchy.
Yeah, it's still shady in the details. There's rumours floating around that the Penguin, who we've kind of speculated was in it because of the politics behind the character.
That's right. They pulled him from something else, Birds of Prey.
They pulled him in place of Black Mask in Birds of Prey. There's rumours that Josh Gad is going to be doing the Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like. I think he's a quirky actor.
Name me something. Josh Gad.
You'd know he's done a lot of musical work.
Okay.
Right. Like Book of Mormon, he was quite famous for doing.
What, the stage show?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he was also in Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
He was in Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, well, I like that.
He's done quite a few films. You'd recognize the face.
Okay.
You'd recognize the voice. Like he's.
I'm guessing, is it Josh Gad, G-A-double-T?
No, G-A-D, Josh Gad.
Josh Gad, okay, because I was going to say the guy who...
Dave Googles furiously.
I don't recognise the guy.
Has no idea what
you're talking about. Actually, I know this guy. Okay, all right, I've seen this guy in something or other. He's done something I've seen.
Guaranteed he's been in something you've seen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. I mean,
he's had behind-the-scenes roles in all the Star Wars films as well.
All right. I could see him as Penguin. Looking at this, I mean, I could see Penguin there.
Yeah, Penguin I could see him as a younger Penguin. I think that's actually a pretty nice casting job.
Oh, jeez, he's been around. I mean, no wonder I've seen him. He's been in a lot of shows.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's probably not a household name.
No.
But
character
you
actor.
Would recognise his face 100%, and his voice is distinctive as well.
Okay. I've actually got a feeling, as soon as I saw him, I don't mind this guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he could... Look, just visually, I could see Penguin. I could see them getting him to a Penguin situation.
Yeah, and I mean, he is already friends with Matt Reeves. Like, those two have... Sure. I don't know if they've worked together before, but they've certainly, like, hung out and been seen in
public. They've had lunch before, Stu, is what you say?
Well, they've been caught, like, paparazzi, like, hanging out and having drinks or whatever they do.
How wonderful.
I don't know if they've worked together before. Sure. I haven't double-checked, but...
You haven't been at the drinks?
It feels like that would be a really good fit for that role.
Yeah, what's that fucking guy? I'm going to name Penguin. I've just thought of one. Jonah Hill.
No.
Bang. Terrible. Fat Jonah Hill, though, not thin Jonah Hill. I don't accept the thin version.
Yeah, no, that's a...
Don't like it?
No.
Really?
Really.
Oh, I just thought it was pretty good.
No, thanks.
Ever seen, what's the show? What's the one called about the end of the world? This is the end, I think it is. Again, he's praying to God. Could you God is Jonah Hill from Moneyball? He's praying to God. You're not feeling it? Why? I'm going for, like, okay, full disclosure, I'm going for, I know he's thin now, but he was an overweight actor for a long time.
No, it's not about the size. Okay. You can play Penguin as skinny. Gotham played Penguin as very skinny.
I want my Penguin fan.
And I think the Gotham Penguin was actually really good.
He was very good.
Despite being skinny, Danny DeVito played him as large, and I reckon Danny DeVito did a great job as playing that Penguin. So it doesn't really matter what size
he is. Penguin in the comics is generally a little rotund.
Yeah.
Short. You know, that's generally Penguin.
And I don't know how tall Josh Gad is, but he's not slender.
He's definitely not slender, based on what I just looked at, for Hollywood.
I don't know how... He's probably going to have to put on, like, a fat suit to go proper rotund Penguin, but...
Yeah, but I don't even... Yeah, I think they could solve that issue. Yeah, no, I mean, I...
But I don't think the size is the issue. I think Jonah Hill is a comedian. He can't...
Jonah Hill's done a bit of drama in his career.
He's done a bit, but he's always played the comedic role.
Oh, he's always done a little... He's done a little bit. What's that one, War Dogs? Is it called War Dogs?
Yeah, where it was a comedy.
Oh, black comedy. There was
comedy.
There was some drama involved.
Wolf of Wall Street, comedy, Moneyball. He was the comedic role.
Wolf of Wall Street is not a comedy. It's got some comedic moments in it, but it's a drama.
Yeah, and who's the dramatic actor?
Well, I know him, one of my
Leo friends. And Margot Robbie.
And Margot Robbie. And don't forget John Bernthal, who does one of the best performances of all time. I love him in that movie. That's
Jonah Hill, comedic timing.
Jonah Hill's just like this fat loser, like, you know, isn't he? Remember?
All of his best movies are either comedies or movies where he's playing the comedy.
But dude, like, look at fucking DeVito. DeVito did a touch of comedy in Batman Returns as Penguin. Definitely there was a touch of comedy there.
Yeah, but DeVito also acted.
Yeah.
And it was over the top and...
But DeVito's, most of his career has been in, I call it comedy, most of his roles during his career, there's comedy in them. It's dramatic comedy. It's dramatic comedy.
But it's comedy. The problem is, I don't think Jonah Hill is capable of the other end.
Okay, well, to be honest...
I don't think he's capable of going dark and...
To be fair, I'm not even... I like this guy more than Jonah Hill for the role. Yeah. Is he locked? Is it announced or is it just...
No, it's heavily rumoured. And it's been rumoured for a long time. And no one seems to be debunking it.
Do you want one... For the first Batman movie, do you want one villain, like Penguin as the villain, to sort of set the tone for the franchise for him?
Typically, I'd like one lead villain.
Mm-hmm.
And then possibly one or two characters that are introduced.
Like a Ra's al Ghul in the Shadows kind of thing or something.
Yeah, one or two scenes and then that's it. That's enough.
Fair enough. No, I agree.
Or at least planting seeds for future films, potentially.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm so looking forward to Matt Reeves' vision of Batman, and I'm so open to whatever they do. I really do trust in him as a director, and I think finally getting over this Affleck fucking mountain. I don't know if it was a question of the studio paying him out or what it was. Like, it's been endless, this negotiation, you know?
I mean, we know that Batfleck was more than just Batman. He was involved at some stage
in... He was going to write and direct.
Directing and writing and producing and pretty much every aspect of these movies.
Yeah.
So he was probably pretty tied in to this whole franchise.
Yeah.
So cutting him out isn't just as simple as replacing the actor.
And he's got an ongoing...
Like, he's still got financial links to these movies. He's still involved.
Well, he's also got a deal with Warners as a director. Like, he has other movies and stuff like that.
Exactly. And I imagine when he signed, it would have been a multi-picture deal, not a single one.
But I guess that they've paid
him out. So there's a chance that he's either had to be paid out, or they've managed to write some kind of contract where he can then do movies under the Warner
heading,
He'll helm them as, you know, a drama.
He may have driven a hard bargain as well. He may have driven a fairly hard bargain, because I'm
exactly right. Like, so I don't think it's as easy as just replacing an actor.
Oh, but it's taken too long, Stu. This negotiation has been going on for like 18 months, if not more.
Yeah, but I imagine that's not uncommon. It's just that it's been so heavily talked about this whole time.
Anyway, we're
most people aren't talking about, will this guy come back 2 years before the next movie's meant to be here?
Well, the good news is they've finally made a fucking decision and they've finally got moving on it. So I'm excited for the future of what's going to happen. A lot of the stuff I'm hearing online, there is a lot of positivity with Warners right now. And yes, there's some optimism. So I heard a report that Shazam is the strongest movie since Dark Knight. That was a report that leaked the other day. Like, someone's... I mean, who knows what they're saying.
I wouldn't be reading too much into that.
Well, I'm not, really. I'm just saying, like... But they said that about Aquaman as well. And, I mean, Aquaman's the most successful DC Warner movies of all time. But I wouldn't say it's the strongest movie, you know, that they've done.
I don't think any movie since the Nolan trilogy has been as strong as those movies.
Definitely not.
They've been more financially viable. But not
Aquaman beat Dark Knight, which I think was the highest. I believe so. I think that was the record it beat. I think Dark Knight was the one it topped.
Yeah, but I think making money is not the same as the strength of the film.
Oh, agreed. Aquaman's nowhere near as strong as like Batman Begins or Dark Knight. Nowhere near.
Any of the Nolan films.
No, I agree. I mean, even Dark Knight Rises, which is considered the weakest of the movies, I think it's still got some great fucking moments. I'm also a massive Batman fan, so, like, a very strong Batman movie is going to register high for me. But, hey, look, Aquaman made money. Shazam, I mean, it's watch this space. I am going to see it in cinemas, but I'm still very much on the fence on that one. Now, there was a Birds of Prey teaser, Stu, which I did in caps on the show notes. Check this out. Very much just a promo reel in the loosest sense when I watched it, Stu.
It's screen testing, not even a promo.
What is it? Screen testing?
Yeah, so it's the same thing. The kind of Warners is run with the theme.
Hmm.
Same thing they released with Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
That footage where he was just standing there kind of smiling as the projector put that image of the cloud on top of him.
Yeah.
It's just an actor in character.
Right.
And they're just seeing what works, what doesn't. So there's no scenes, there's no lines, there's nothing like that. These actors just said, you're in character.
Mm.
This is like, you've got a 10-meter square to do something in. Mm. You can dance, you can stand there, you can look menacing. Do whatever you feel is natural for the character, and really, we just want to see what works on camera.
Harley Quinn was the one you saw the most of. The rest of it was all kind of silhouettes, wasn't it?
I mean, you saw full shots of every other...
You saw Huntress with her crossbow.
You saw all of them. You saw every other character in there.
List it through, Stu. List it through. I only watched it very briefly this morning. Who did we see? Huntress with the crossbow?
Yeah, we saw Huntress. We saw Canary. We saw Harley a few times.
Sure.
We saw Black Mask.
Did we?
Yep, we saw Victor Zsasz.
Did we? Jesus, I've got to watch this thing again.
You've got to watch anything properly.
Victor Zsasz.
Just watch one thing properly. I love
Victor Zsasz. Victor Zsasz. What, did he have the scars on him?
He actually looked quite different to what I would have thought. He's got, like, short, bleach blonde hair instead of shaved hair.
You know how he scars himself every person he kills?
Yeah, I know Victor Zsasz, but no, he doesn't have scars all over him.
How do you know it's Victor Zsasz, then?
What do you mean? He's credited as Victor Zsasz.
I've got to watch this again because I'm at sea. I put in caps, check this out to Stu, and then hadn't watched it myself, and then Stu mentioned it to me.
Once again, Dave, just letting everybody down.
No. When the news broke on Twitter that it was coming out, I went to watch it, but then I got distracted because all the Harley photos, and then, you know, basically I forgot about the actual trailer.
I mean, Harley obviously gets the most screen time.
She does, basically.
First of all, because she's the most well-known character.
Yeah.
Secondly, Margot Robbie already knows how to be in that character.
Sure.
So she can dance, she can kind of stand there. Like, there's plenty of... Well, she had the mallet.
The mallet. I love the mallet.
Yeah. There is a shot of someone holding the baseball bat, and we assume it's Harley, but wearing a different outfit to what we've seen before, and we don't see the face.
Mm.
But similar build to Margot Robbie, so we're assuming it's her.
I can't wait for this movie. I mean, when's this coming out? Is this 2020? I think it is.
Yeah, the earliest.
Yeah, it's 2020, man. Birds of Prey, watch your space. I mean, we'll get more information on this as it counts down. I've got to watch it again, dude. The fact you're seeing Black Mask and Victor Zsasz in it.
Yeah, we get to see, like, Obi-Wan standing there looking damn fine in a suit, by the
way. Dude, I totally forgot that Ewan McGregor's playing Black Mask.
And he looks good.
Is he in a mask?
No, he's not. So what they're saying is, because there's obviously different versions of Black Mask.
Right.
There's been versions where that is his face.
Right.
And there's other versions where he's wearing a mask. I think it was carved from the coffin of his dad, wasn't it, originally?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it looks like it's...
I'm pretty sure it's like an ebony mask that's carved from his dad's... Is he scared
of something? Why is there a reason he's doing this?
Well, I mean, he was a gangster. He just wanted to hide his face in the original.
Ah, really?
Like, old-school version of Black Mask.
Has he been around, like, forever?
A long time, yeah.
Because I only know him from, like, Catwoman. I didn't know him as a character before the Ed Brubaker Catwoman, which...
No, I don't know when his debut is. I'll try to find his...
Try to find that one out.
...first issue. But I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in the 60s.
Yeah, because he's not in the 60s show, as far as I'm aware. But probably because a mob boss like him, it's a little rough for the TV show, you know? They didn't have Two-Face in the show either.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's very interesting, Stu.
So, there are newer versions of Black Mask,
mm-hmm.
where his whole skull, it's like a red skull, but black
kind
of character. So this is obviously going to be a earlier version of Black Mask.
So what, he didn't wear a mask when he was in the early versions, or only sometimes?
So his first appearance was 1985. So quite a bit later than that.
Oh, okay. So 80s character.
Yeah. Doug Munch.
Doug Munch, okay. Right. Yeah, who had a long run on Batman. Two runs.
Yeah. So basically he's just going to be a gangster character who will at some stage put on the mask.
Wow. Do we know if Catwoman's in this? In Birds of Prey?
Nothing confirmed.
Okay. But I'm just...
They haven't found a Catwoman, though.
No.
Nothing's ever been announced about them finding a Catwoman, either for a Batman or for a... Birds of Prey or a Harley or anything.
Hardest thing in the world to cast, Catwoman.
I don't know. They fucked up pretty majorly before, so...
Well, but, I mean, I've said it before, Mila Kunis. I mean, I'll say it again. I'll say it till the cows come home. I mean, she is Catwoman. I see her now. I see her on screen, I start thinking about Catwoman. That's how embedded it is in my brain. Whoever came up with that rumour I'm like, that would just be, I can just see it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it, you know, yeah. I'm just saying there's a lot of actresses who could fit the bill.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... No,
there's plenty, but it's a pretty big role. You don't want to cast it easily. Like, it's...
No, yeah, you've got to kind of... What did you think of Anne Hathaway as Catwoman?
I really like Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, I thought she did a very decent job as Catwoman in Dark Knight Rises. I actually really thought she was actually quite good.
She was great.
Yeah.
She's one of the best cast people in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the critical reaction was like, but I personally thought she did a good job. I thought it was a very good performance. Catwoman's one of my favourite characters, as you know, and I think you could still go further with that character. I actually think that there's more to that character that could be explored in kind of a female-centric Birds of Prey, Gotham City Sirens kind of field. So we know Black Canary. I'm just trying to lock them down. Black Canary, obviously, Harley and Huntress are the confirmed.
Yeah, and they're all in the teaser.
Okay, cool.
And then the two kind of villains are Black Mask and Zazz.
That's pretty fucking cool. That's two really of my favourite villains, man. Like, I love Victor Zazz. I haven't read enough storylines of him. I know him from the game, dude. Remember he was in Arkham Knight, I think it was, or...
He's been all the Arkham games.
Yeah, and like, he kicks ass. I think Brubaker did some stuff with him in his Batman run. He's a good character. I think he worked really well inside. I think that sounds like a really good combination of exciting Batman characters that don't get the film spotlight. You know, that it could be very interesting. I'm very excited for that movie. Now, we've got, and this is the final time we're going to mention this guy, Bill Maher. Tripled down on his anti-comics rhetoric during the week. He caused a few waves. I mean, here's a quote from him, Stu. On his show, "I'm not happy Stan Lee is dead. I'm sad you're alive," to comic fans. This guy's just like, you know, I mean, I think searching for, you know, more spotlight or something. But he's just
searching for relevance in this decade.
Yeah, well, he's going up to Kevin Smith, who's been on his show many times. And he was kind of like taking shots at Kevin Smith. And it's like, dude, this guy's been on his show like a stack of times. Like, I think it's just he's the equivalent almost of like... those sort of talk radio hosts who sort of
it's a
like,
shock jock, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like the TV.
He's just trying to cause controversy for no reason.
But what I thought was, this is what I brought up. You know what he reminded me of? His
dinosaur?
Comments. Yeah, but he actually reminded me when I was at school, that was nearly every member of the class bar about two people. Like, that's how much the culture has shifted. Back when I was at school, comics were treated like he talks about them. Like, that's what everyone, like kids included, were like about people who read comics. And at the time I thought, this is ridiculous. Like, these comics are great. And I wasn't too worried. But what's funny is, with the success of the movies and everything, like, that's really shifted. And yet this guy is very much preaching from, like, that was very much regulation rhetoric back in the 80s. It did to sort of the geeks at school who read comics. There was only a couple of you, if you know what I mean. And I would read them in, like, lunch breaks, and I would read them in, like, you know, reading time at school and stuff. And, like, you would get hammered by some of the guys in the class. And it's just funny. It actually what it reminded me of. And it's kind of like, well, this is just a guy who's... I don't know if he... I mean, he's trying to say, like, read big boy books. That's how he's trying to sort of justify it. Like, because some people have kind of pushed back and said, well, what about this book or that book, you know... Mouse or Watchmen or something that's got some sort of deeper significance beyond superheroes. He's like, well, if you're interested in deeper relevance, you should be reading. And he starts listing like philosophers and stuff like that. What do you think, Stuart?
I honestly couldn't give a fuck if he's alive or dead. Like, he doesn't matter one iota to me.
Yeah, true. I was just.
He is a very old, irrelevant man who's struggling to cling on to whatever fame stardom he's got.
Well, he's still got a show, hasn't he? So he's just like still got his time. Like, sort of, like that's basically it.
He just spouts hatred.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I almost... There's a part of me that thinks, is it really hatred or is it really just kind of more cynical than that? You know, like, it's...
He knows saying anything controversial sells. That's what he's doing.
Sure.
He doesn't actually care either way.
Yeah, I was like...
Don't let this fool you that Bill Maher actually doesn't like comic books.
Wouldn't it be funny if he's at home right now reading Batman? Like, you know, busted reading Dark Knight Returns in his bathroom or something.
Oh, it's Dark Knight Returns is a classic.
Yeah, anyway.
It doesn't matter. Like, I don't...
We won't cover it again on the show. I just thought I'd bring it up.
Who cares about this guy?
Yeah.
Honestly, who cares?
I mean, I wouldn't even know where to find his show. Like, to be honest. Anyway, we've already covered Aquaman's the highest grossing DC movie in history. Stu, this could be interesting for you. I don't know if you're a fantasy reader. Amazon's Wheel of Time series reveals a synopsis and production start. So it's moving ahead at Amazon. Wheel of Time is a very long and successful fantasy series by Robert Jordan. Brandon Sanderson finished, I think, the last couple of volumes after Robert Jordan passed away.
Yeah, he did the last two books.
Have you read it, Stu?
I haven't, no. I've heard good things.
Yeah, I've read a few of them. It's very generic, but good. So it's kind of like picking up where Tolkien left off and dumbing it down a bit. But
well, I've actually kind of heard quite a few people that have read it, and they actually enjoy Sanderson's last two books more than the rest of it.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that it's certainly interesting and works, but it goes through large amounts of treading water at times. And I have heard the same thing, that Sanderson kind of came in and gave it a spit and polish and sort of paid it off pretty well, which doesn't surprise me. He's a, you know...
Sanderson's an incredibly talented
writer. Yeah, he's a very good writer.
Very
talented. Look, but that said, there is a lot of interesting stuff in these books, and I think as a TV show, that's one thing it's got going for it, Stu. It's got subplots on subplots on subplots. As well as a bigger story.
Well, look, I mean, when you're writing when there's a series of 13 novels,
yeah.
There's plenty of fodder for TV.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can spin out 10 seasons pretty easily from that.
He was a Vietnam War veteran, actually, Robert Jordan, and, you know, died, I mean, not young, but certainly died still in his prime and was writing till almost the day he died, like, to finish the books.
Well, he did, and he never quite got there.
But
luckily, he left enough work that...
Yeah.
Sanderson could come in and
I wonder what their relationship was like. I wonder if they were friends or, you know, if...
I mean, I believe it was all prearranged before.
Yeah, because his eyesight was failing. He was going blind, actually.
It's actually very similar to what Game of Thrones is doing.
Sure.
George R. R. Martin's done a very similar deal with Sanderson as well.
Really?
Basically in that he...
passed away.
Martin has already outlined... where he wants all his characters to end, and he has the bones of the story done, and he's had them for years.
Yeah.
And he's told a few people about some of them. Dan and Dave, who run the TV show.
Yes.
Have seen it and they've read it.
Maybe doing the Star Wars movies.
Yep. So they know who sits on the throne at the end, or if there's a throne at the end, or he knows how those books end. And apparently that he's done the same thing with Sanderson.
Who's your guess for who's on the throne at the end? I've got absolutely no fucking idea. Who's your guess for winner of this whole brutal war?
Oh, well, I would assume there's no throne.
Okay.
And there is no one ruler.
Yeah, that would sort of, yeah, I could sort of see that.
But otherwise, I think it's Daenerys and Jon Snow getting hitched.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes back to the old school Targaryen because he is her nephew.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't know that about Sanderson. So Sanderson's been clued in by George R. R. Martin. Because, I mean, George R. R. Martin, let's be brutally honest, isn't in the best of health when you see him around. Like, if this guy...
Look, he's getting on regardless. Yeah. Like, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah.
But he's not in the greatest shape.
Yeah.
And Sanderson's one of the safest set of hands. You could leave this kind of...
Yeah, and he's a talented writer too. Himself.
Not only is he a giant in this field...
Yeah.
But he's finished off for Robert Jordan, The Wheel of Time.
Yep.
And he did that masterfully. He put enough of his flair into it that people recognised it was his writing.
Sure.
But he still carried through all the ties and all the threads that, Jordan fans loved.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
And that's not an easy job to do.
Absolutely not.
Like, that's, like, I'll say that, like, and I'm not the biggest Wheel of Time fan, but if you've invested, like, a lot of time into it, like, it's got some hardcore fans... That new writer who's got to just actually stick the landing. I mean, that's challenging.
Sticking the landing's hard enough.
Yeah, but you've got to come into another guy's work.
But then you've got to do
late it in the piece.
Understanding all the characters that someone else has written.
A series that essentially had kind of lost its way a little bit too and was kind of going on in years. Like, it wasn't exactly in its prime when he's picked it up.
Martin's kind of already tapped Sanderson and basically said,
okay,
should it happen?
Sure.
I'm leaving it to you. I've got all my notes. Everything will be
left to you. That's a surprise. I didn't know that at all.
I mean, the other great thing about that is Sanderson is well known for releasing books promptly.
He's very prolific. I've noticed that myself.
If you go on his personal website, he's actually got timelines showing where his books are up to.
You met him, actually, didn't you? What was he like in person, Stu?
Really lovely. Really nice. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. That's good, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is, when he's not writing, he's actually at college teaching people how to write.
That's amazing. So he's got a teaching gig on top of all this.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So he comes in and does, and I've watched quite a few of them online. You can actually Google.
I'd actually be interested.
He's on YouTube. You can watch his seminars.
He's the kind of writer that I do look up to. Very much a working writer in the field. He's high quality, but he's prolific. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's the way he writes is actually quite interesting. Like, he plans everything.
Does he? Okay. All right.
And he's got a lot of reasons for it. And there's a brilliant lecture series on YouTube. If you Google, Brandon Sanderson lecture.
Yeah.
I think there's a series of 10 lectures that he taught to a college level class where one of them is just on magic in fantasy.
Yes.
And he's like, this is how you write a magic system. And it's got to have rules. It's got to have boundaries and systems. And
very much a hallmark of the books of his I've read. Have you read this series? I think it's called Age of Kings. Have you read that Brandon Sanderson series? I think it's called Age of Kings. I've only read about the first sort of half of the first book. Extremely interesting. Extremely.
Are you doing Stormlight Archives?
No, it's not Stormlight Archives, but it's released around the same time. Way of Kings, maybe? Way of Kings, I think it's called. I've read about the first... I started the first book, and it's got one of the best prologues of anything I've ever read. Like, honestly, like, I actually read this opening, like, you know, fantasy scene and the setup for the series, and I was like, this is like one of the best openings I've ever read in any sort of. And I've read widely in fantasy, and as I've said before on the show, completely got burnt out on it.
Yeah,
and just didn't read it for years. And have come back to it in later age, but much more sparingly. But I read that on a plane or something, and I was like, this is actually so good that I'm much more invested than I normally ever get in like fantasy stuff anymore. I really would recommend. I believe it's called Way of Kings, something like that. And I'm definitely going to finish reading that series. But what I will say, I've read a lot of the Stormlight Archives. Is that the Mistborn, sorry?
Mistborn's fantastic.
Maybe it is the
Stormlight Archives. It's not finished. Okay. They're still going.
I've read like about three of the Mistborn, and I really found that addictive. You know, like, I'm not sure if it was like the best ever stuff, but it was certainly a page turner. You know, like, it reminded me actually of like much high quality, really good Stephen King. But when Stephen King was really going well, you really found his work was a page turner. I found that Mistborn series was like, you kept you glued. Like,
I loved Mistborn series.
Yeah.
So Way of Kings is Stormlight Archives, book one.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, that's the one.
So that is a series that is still ongoing.
Have you read that?
Yes, I have.
That opening, dude, where they're like going in and out of the worlds and stuff, like, you know, and whatever it was. Like, I was like, this is some fucking next level shit.
Yeah.
I really was.
And
very
then there's impressed. Books like Elantris.
Okay.
Which is an earlier book of his.
Mm-hmm.
And you read maybe 70% of that book thinking, this is so slow. What's going on? Why am I still reading it?
Yeah.
But I just kind of keep picking it up. Like, it's not that I'm loving it, but I'm not. I just keep picking it up.
Yeah.
And then you hit that 70% mark, and all of a sudden, shit starts kicking off.
Yeah.
And the book just ramps up like you wouldn't believe, and you're just enthralled.
Well, I think his planning shows in his work. I mean, he's got nice character touches, but his planning and his sense of story and his world building is extremely strong.
Mm.
Which is, I mean, like, that's old school fantasy, but he gives it a bit of a modern twist, which you need, you know. I haven't read everything he's ever done, but what I have read, I've really noticed a high quality threshold.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So anyway, moving on from that, Stu, Kevin Smith on his podcast. I do like listening to Kevin Smith's podcasts. I don't listen to every single one. But he has Mark Benandi on, and they did, I think it's called the Scum and Villainy Cafe or something they have in LA. Now, anyway, he was doing some filming over in England. I think he went and visited the set of Episode 9. That's what his story was. He went and visited the set of Episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
JJ had him on set. You know, he couldn't talk at all about it, and he didn't talk about it. But what he did bump into was a stack of people at those Pinewood Studios who were involved with Justice League. Okay, and he had some interesting stuff. Now, this is broke over the internet, but I want to go through it. So Kevin Smith talked to people who worked on both versions of Justice League, i.e. Zack Snyder's version and Joss Whedon coming in. When Joss Whedon took over, they actually called it on set Justice League. They actually changed the
Justice
name.
Justice League.
Yeah. And anyway...
Where did you get Justice League from? Really? Like
from the way I had to...
From Joss Whedon? Yeah.
Joss Whedon. Joss Weirdo. Whedon. So, how do you say it?
Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon.
Justice League.
Justice League.
Just okay. Put his name in for Just.
So I would have already filed that, like, part of the crew. Can we not call it Justice League? Do we have to call it Justice League, like, constantly? Anyway...
I can't believe how incompetent you are.
That's not
the most basic of all puns, and you still lost.
Yeah, I didn't find it that funny. Like when he kicked off the whole thing with that, my eyes rolled. I was like, oh, this is going to be really exciting. But then it got really exciting. So apparently on set, they saw Jim Lee break down boards for all three Justice League movies that Zack Snyder had planned. So this is all relating to Zack Snyder. First movie was kind of what we saw. In that movie, though, that Zack Snyder was going to do, you do glimpse Darkseid at the end. Justice League 2 was going cosmic as they take the fight to Apocalypse. The Lantern Corps was involved heavily in like a big battle for that. The guy talking to Alfred, Jeremy Irons' character in the trailer, was a Green Lantern. They had green lights on Jeremy Irons and stuff. You remember the one where he's going, I hope you're not too late? And people were speculating it was Superman. In fact, that was a Green Lantern in the, what Zack Snyder was filming. The third movie, 2, ends on a down note. They get defeated. Darkseid goes to Earth and levels it. Batman's vision from Batman vs. Superman is essentially that, with the Earth dominated by Darkseid. The Hero's Last Stand is a third movie on basically a dead Earth. And they saw the beatboard, and they saw basically the whole story was laid out. So that was kind of the vision that Zack Snyder had.
I mean, let's be honest, this isn't a unique vision.
No, but it's...
I mean, this is Avengers 1, 3, and 4.
But, can I say this?
Like, in order, exactly as they did it.
I don't know, man, but I will say this, though. Like, yeah, no, there's nothing unique about it. But I was saying last episode to you, if you recall, like, a series like the Grant Morrison did, like, even a Grant Morrison when he did Justice League or Final Crisis... That kind of big scope on a Justice League movie, I reckon, would be absolutely, A, doable these days, and B, absolutely awesome. And I thought, like, the small signs we saw in the Justice League that we did get, where the Green Lantern was there, like, stuff like that, I was like, that could really pop off. Like, I can imagine that could be done so well. Like, I get Zack Snyder would have put his huge Zack Snyder spin on it all. But, I mean, in terms of vision, like... It's got an epicness that, you know, I could see having worked. It would have been better than what we got. Because what we got, I thought, was just a real mishmash.
See, I don't think that stands. I don't think what you're saying makes any sense.
Why?
Well, because clearly the three movies didn't have vision and all the rest of it. Because the first movie actually got made, and it wasn't good.
But he got fired off it.
It, in fact, was terrible.
Yeah, but like...
Are you trying to say that when Joss Whedon came on, he destroyed everything he touched...
No.
He ruined it, and that's why it was bad? Do you think it was 90% Zack Snyder and the story and everything they had working with?
I think that...
And Joss effectively just finished it.
I think Zack Snyder's vision for the whole DC universe was flawed in its inception.
Exactly. I don't think these three movies are...
Look...
Amazing visions.
But that said, when you say stuff like they're taking the fight to Apocalypse, they're bringing the Green Lantern Corps, like that's all stuff I would have expected and hoped for in a Justice League movie, rather than being Earthbound, like really downplaying the Superman death and return. Like I thought that was like really small staking what should have been a much grander picture. No, it's not Joss Whedon's fault. I mean, he the studio fired Zack Snyder as a fucking. The reviews on Batman vs. Superman were poor. The box office started going downhill after the second week. Like, that's what happened. And they're trying to retool
what... So these movies don't have vision. They're not great...
No, I'm just...
Scripts. Sort of, like, this like, is...
They're saying one was very similar to what we got.
Exactly.
Except you saw Darkseid at the end. What Kevin Smith was saying, and he was really just repeating, that was more than anything... was that the vision did go a lot bigger in terms of going to Apocalypse and bringing in the Green Lantern Corps. Like, I think something like that should have been done already. Like, I'm sort of surprised they didn't do that. And I was chatting to... Because we were chatting, I don't know if it was last show or show before, about how you don't think there'll be another Justice League. I mean, I've had listeners saying they're thinking within 3 years there'll be another Justice League. I mean, I don't know.
Look, looking purely at the fact that they're soft rebooting franchises that really didn't need to be soft rebooted.
Sure.
Like, why reboot Suicide Squad? When we're taking the same half cast and running with the same cast.
I would have done Suicide Squad dot dot another title. That's what I would have.
Exactly. Yet they've chosen to reboot it.
Oh.
So, I mean, they are clearly not on board with this whole world building exercise. They're doing single bubbles of let's hope it works. If it does, we'll make another bubble.
Well, yeah.
They're not world building. They're not making a greater event here. I mean, they're running with, what, two or possibly three different Batmans concurrently.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, they're running with three different versions of the Batman. There are three different Batman in the DC movies.
They're finished with Affleck now. He's walking away.
Yeah, but we've still got Affleck in that version. Like, he's still played with Aquaman. He's still played with Wonder Woman. Like, he is still in that universe.
I seriously think that, like, if
you've then got whatever they're going to do in the Joker, whether that's past, present, future, doesn't matter.
Elseworlds.
You've then got this new Batman version.
Mm.
Like, that's three potentially different people playing Batman.
I would
concurrently.
I would bet on it that you.
The fact that they are trying to push towards a Justice League doesn't hold true. They're not trying to push towards.
I'm just saying. I think it'll happen within. I think within 5 years you'll see it. Like I really do. I think you'll. What amalgamation that takes, I don't know. You know, I think you'll get there in the end. I really do. If these movies make money, I'm sure you will. It could take 5 years though. Like I'm not thinking. Like it's 2021 before the Batman even hits cinemas. So it's not going to be before then. We'll see. I don't know. I just found it interesting, and I did like. Unfortunately, though, although I think Zack Snyder at times is quite brilliant visually, like I think visually, say Watchmen has masterpiece level pieces to it, and same with say 300. There are visual moments in like Man of Steel and Batman Superman that I find very impressive. I think story wise, he was flawed from the get go. So I don't have a huge amount of faith in him being able to pay this story off. I just thought it was interesting.
Not at all.
Anyway, he is moving forward though with a new film at Netflix. So it's good to see that Zack Snyder's moving on because he has spent a lot of time stoking the fires of that Snyder's cut stuff, which I'm surprised a director would do. To me, if this happens, you kind of want to move on with your next project ASAP. But he's spent a lot of time.
Yes, but remembering that, like, there's a very good reason that he left that world for a while. Like, he was dealing with the tragedy of his
suicide.
Exactly. He was dealing with family tragedy. He's not going to jump back in and spend 9 months in a movie set somewhere.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. He has spent a lot of time, though, releasing information of his version of Justice League to the internet as well. He has.
It drives up sales for his movies that are already out there.
Yeah.
He gets bigger royalties.
And he has a fan base. There is a very passionate fan base with that whole release of Snyder Cut stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just keeping them fed so they don't.
Sure.
Ignore him and move on and desert. Like, unfortunately, part of the news cycle right now is unless you're constantly there, you're going to get forgotten about pretty quickly.
Yeah, true. What do you think? Because I must admit, like, until probably Man of Steel and I guess Sucker Punch, I was really quite the Zack Snyder fan, almost fanboy. Like, I really was impressed by quite a number of his movies. I had my concerns from the second I saw Man of Steel. Like, that was just not my movie. You know what I mean? Like, I had concerns from when he stood up at Comic-Con and was doing Batman vs. Superman and Lines from Dark Knight. I'm like, we're trying to start a universe here at the end. But where are you on him, Stu? Do you think this is a guy who's got more films left in him? Like,
100%. What kind of question is that?
But, I mean, hit movies. I mean,
like he's not old. He's not past it. He's still a relevant filmmaker.
Yeah. I hope he comes charging back.
What kind of question is that, Dave?
Well, I just mean, because of what happened, like, not only personally, but professionally, he suffered quite the hit. I'm just wondering, like, do you think he's got the juice to come back to the scene as big as he was, kind of thing?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll... I look forward to his next product. Like, I just felt like reputation... He took a big hit on Justice League.
Yeah, he's not capable of building a universe.
Yeah.
He is a filmmaker, not a universe maker.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige is a universe builder.
Sure.
Like, you've got to be a different kind of person to put that sort of stuff together.
Good point.
And Kevin Feige didn't direct any one of those films. That's the difference.
Producer of it all, isn't he?
That's the difference. Yeah. He's not involved in the nitty-gritty of any one film.
It's more like a showrunner.
He's there to make sure that the directors know roughly where they've got to be and keeps everything kind of in shape and in the right track, right theme-ish.
Mm.
Obviously, we're going to have happies and darks and everything in between, but Like, the Marvel movies have been very consistent in terms of tone and theme.
Mm.
They've all been the PG to, you know, M-rated,
mm.
Mm. bright, lighthearted,
quite
comedic.
A bit of comedy and quite a bit of, a lot of them.
Exactly.
Because
he knows that you can keep pumping them out and not a problem.
Mm.
You can add any character to that level.
I will say, though, and I've said it before on the show, that, like, as impressive as that is, and it is impressive, and it's translated hugely to the box office, you do sacrifice an element of vision at times on some of those movies. Like, not all those movies are as visionary as, say, Thor Ragnarok, which I think...
I don't think not all they were meant to be.
Yeah,
see,
I
honestly think, if you look in the last few years, Marvel has aimed to have one be visionary.
Yeah.
One movie a year.
Yeah.
Another one is meant to bring in the money.
Sure.
And then the third is kind of the lesser, let's keep rolling them out, let's keep the characters fresh.
Your Ant-Man's one or two.
It's your Ant-Man, it's your first Doctor Strange, which wasn't meant to do amazing numbers or be visionary.
Sure.
It's your kind of lesser product.
And I will say for Doctor Strange, I'm no Doctor Strange fan, really.
Mm-hmm.
But the formula was still in operation, and I did find it worked. Like, I found myself buying...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, even with their lower budget film, with their take a chance on a new director, which was their Guardians pick, by the way.
Yes.
They can still kick out an easy 7 out of 10.
Oh, they're amazing, yeah. Like, yes, they're super successful. Anyway...
Yes, they're playing it safe, but they're not trying for a 10 out of 10 on all three.
No.
And you look at the last year, we've had, like, Black Panther came out, which was meant to be their visionary movie. That's them pushing the envelope and trying to win awards.
And it broke $1 billion.
It happened to break every record for... Yeah. Like, that kind of movie.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And it has won a ton of awards. It won another two awards this week from the Screen Actors Guild.
Mm.
And then you had the big blockbuster make-a-billion-dollars movie, which was Infinity War, which made $2
billion. Crazy numbers.
And then you go on to their kind of quirky side project, keep the characters up and running, which also lets them carry story threads through.
Mm.
Which was Ant-Man. And that you see that every year from Marvel. They're very consistent in what they do, and it's not trying to make 10 out of 10 movies every time.
Sure. Agreed. Agreed. Well, look...
So that's the big difference. When you're Zack Snyder, and you're directing as well as trying to build this universe, you want your movies to be the 10 out of 10 movie.
Mm.
You don't want to sit back and go, my job is to make a 7 out of 10 and cruise towards the universe.
Yeah. No, he was. His imprint was all over it too, wasn't it? Like,
so he was pushing to make every movie the biggest visual movie he could make.
Yeah.
Like to
and
massive.
At some element, I sort of appreciated the, how can I say, the sort of ambition of it. But it was just, it just sort of was a very flawed and messy execution.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Anyway, well... Anyway, the you know, we're, luckily we're still all works in progress, and like he'll go and make more movies, and there'll be more Warner movies, and as you say, the Marvel thing is only going to pick up more speed. Like Disney aren't going anywhere, you know what I mean?
No, I mean they are going to change the dynamic a little bit.
Yeah.
At this point, it's just not feasible to have every character in an Avengers movie.
Mm.
From this point on, it's almost impossible to do that.
Do you
that
think they'll
regular.
Do West Coast, East Coast kind of thing? I think that'd be fun.
I think quite possibly.
I think
or
be
they'll do.
Fun.
Or they'll do like an A-team and get a bunch all the female characters together or do a cosmic version and get all the space team together and like there's plenty of team
like
ups they've got.
Dude. Like in the comics.
Exactly like in the comics.
Like I'm down for it, man. Like you'd be surprised. Like I think at times when I do this podcast, I realize that I probably actually when I look at myself hard, probably skew slightly more to DC in comics.
Yep.
But and I mean slightly. But as well, though, I'm constantly impressed by so many Marvel stories that we come across and I come across in my own research that I think this is just so ripe to be exploited and melded. Like, there's just so much of a wealth of material. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, when I say I skew, it's because that's where my history is. But when I chat to, say, Drew Geraci or you, for example, like, there's hidden classics and long runs. And sometimes just concepts that you know that they could modernize and do well at Marvel. And
yeah,
I just
feel
like the sky's the limit sort of thing. Like, and don't forget they're going to get like X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they're going to have so many more characters to play with.
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge universe.
And I mean, they've already basically hinted at the fact that they're going to have to start building in more buddy duo teams.
Sure.
Putting two and three characters together and running a story.
Sounds good.
Instead of having the 70 Avengers or the single solo.
And he said films. He's not going to do the... Feige said he's not going to do the rollout of 10 movies again, is he? Where he's not going to do, like, here's our list of our next 6 or 7 films.
No, no. They've intentionally said we are not releasing a slate of movies at a time because people just absorb it and then the next day...
Yeah.
They're going, well, what comes after that?
Yeah.
When's the next thing?
Yeah. You just got to... You're trying to sort of feed them more slowly.
And Feige had nothing to tell them for, like... 3 years.
Because he's working so
hard.
There
was no way he could go, well, the next movie is, because he'd just given them 3 years worth of info.
And you find yourself apologising to, like, reporters who are desperate to know when the Black Widow movie is or whatever.
Yeah, or when, yeah, exactly right. Hmm. So this gives them more flexibility. It gives them more news that they can sprinkle out, keep themselves in the news cycle. It's a better way.
Now, Warner Brothers are developing an animated Batman Beyond for theatrical release, Joe.
I believe they got debunked today.
Oh, seriously?
As you yawn through the news.
Why didn't you fucking delete that from the news item? You waited till I reported on it to debunk it?
Yeah.
Why? And who debunked it? I mean, are you serious this was debunked?
Yeah.
I mean, I got this from a valid news source, but I can't remember. I got this from somewhere on the internet, and I even kept it in the caps lock that it was in when I encountered it.
Okay, so Warner Animation Group, WB Animation TV, and DC have all said Batman Beyond is a rumor at best. There's no truth behind it.
Oh, well, you know. I mean,
so there you go. That was fun for you.
Well, I would appreciate next time when you're deleting news items that you delete stuff that you know is debunked. That's all I ask of you over there, Jimmy Olsen. Like,
what do you mean? I enjoy you.
You brought no news to the
copy
table.
And pasting, and then just going, "Oh shit!"
So far, you've brought exactly zero news to the table.
I've brought plenty of news to the table.
I think you've brought none. None in the official notes.
Oh really? Really?
Some asides. So far, unless I'm going to encounter it. Now,
you've actually already read some of the news that I've put in there.
Well, good.
And now, I've deleted some of your news. So
yeah, well, that's a shame.
That counts doubly.
That's a shame.
I'm going to leave that one in, though, because that's fun.
Stephen King's The Stand was ordered to series at CBS All Access from Josh Boone and Ben Cavill, making it, I think, the second series after Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access. So, look, Stephen King's The Stand, considered one of his best books, was a pretty decent miniseries around in the early 90s. Really a very good Stephen King book, actually. I will watch an updated version. Have you ever read the books, Stu?
No, I haven't.
To be honest, like, if you're going to read a Stephen King book, I will recommend this book. It is considered, like, his high watermark. It's pretty cool. Stephen... Wynn? Wynn? How do I say it?
Try reading it.
Ewan?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Where did you get Wynn from?
I don't know. I was a guess.
That's not even dyslexia. That's just... stupidity. What is it?
There's no need.
I don't immediately recognise that word. I'm just going to make one up.
Yeah.
And it's got nothing to do with what I'm reading.
Ewan. Stephen Ewan from Walking Dead is the voice of Mark, a.k.a. Invincible, in an Amazon animated show. J.K. Simmons plays his father.
I'm excited to see J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
I love him. He's got a great voice.
Oh, fantastic. I'm excited for this animated show. I mean, I hope it's got a high budget and stuff. Like, it's a great comic book series.
Yeah, looks good.
Also a very, at times, brutally graphic comic book series. Like, they have quite violent scenes in it a fair bit of the time. Now, Stu, a little bit of a game for you. Some stuff I got off Collider. Episode 9 or Avengers Endgame is bad. Which is the bigger disappointment? To you, Stuart.
Avengers. Easily.
Okay, right. Well,
so they've got nothing but good credit going into it.
Okay. Oh, I see. Where is that?
Whereas eight was disappointing.
I see.
So if 9 is disappointing, people are like, well, it's just Star Wars doing Star Wars. Let's just be upset and angry at everybody.
Like they have been for a while now.
Yeah.
Do you feel that's cooling off now?
It's cooling off just because people have tried to forget about Solo.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
But, I mean, look, they haven't had a great run into. Hopefully it picks up and they have an amazing finish.
Dude, I'm pumped for episode 9, man.
I want it to be amazing. I really do want it to be amazing. But Avengers has got everything riding on it.
You're right. If Avengers is
they've
bad,
had no slip
be,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
They're cruising towards what could be a $2 billion+ movie.
Yeah.
Like it's monstrously big.
Yeah, it's unlikely to bomb.
Anything that slips up there is a massive disappointment.
Yeah. Now there's a lot of talk show. Oh, by the way, I was bragging to Ray the other day about how in Star Wars Last Jedi, remember we did shot-for-shot review? Do you remember that? Remember we did the review of fucking Last Jedi that went for about 3 hours? And I was actually, like, impressed because I can't remember much.
You can't remember anything.
Yeah, I know, but, like, I fucking, like, hung in there for that, like, shot-by-shot thing. I don't know how I did
that. The memory of a goldfish when it comes to
watching. I think you must have been doing the heavy lifting in that review.
I do the heavy lifting in every review, Dave. It helps when you see it. It helps when you see the product.
No, but I said to Ray, when episode 9 comes out of Ringame, we're going to try to do shot-by-shot. I'm going to try to take us through, like, visually, like, boom, 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 this, like...
I'll tell you what, we're going to be doing it for Avengers.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Settle in. Like, because, I mean, I was part of a roundtable once, I think it was Batman Superman with Dusty, and we did, like, it was close to 4 hours. And, like, at one point, I just, like, he was talking at one point, and I was like, man, I'm lost in his words. He finished, and I was like, how do I respond? Like, you've asked about 17 questions in one comment. Yeah, and then he said to me, anything to add, Dave? And I was like, Dusty, I think you've said it all. It's not often I've lost words. But I was genuinely...
I kind of wish it would happen more often sometimes.
Dusty just blew it away. Like, it was almost like he blew the cobwebs off the mic and he just went at it. Like, he can do 2 hours like it's nothing. Like, he's not even sweating. So I'm saying we're going to up our game. Avengers Endgame, Ray, get ready for it. We're bringing our A game. And then episode 9, I'm going in shot by shot.
That's well, you'd better take a pad and a pen because you are going to forget 90% of what you see.
What I'm actually going to
do. You've actually got to be the worst reviewer I've ever heard of.
What? I take umbrage.
Where you've got one of two problems and you'll do one of them no matter what. You will either get through 70% and then give up. So your review is the first half at best.
That's fine. Yeah.
Or your other one is you just forget everything you saw. You watch it and you go, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I can't remember anything that happened.
Wrong.
Really?
That's.
I would point you to the 3 things we've reviewed this very episode.
All right, now.
Punisher, 70%.
Sure.
Victor Zsasz, didn't see him. Missed that entirely. Well, Hobbs and Shaw, give me a detail. Give me some details from Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw kicked off with Idris Elba sort of going on and on about his superpowers. And, like, how he's a killing machine, all that kind of... How he's the bad guy, and he was, like, all juiced up. Then cut to, like, The Rock, and cut to Jason Statham, and they were mismatched partners, and there was a scene when he was coming off the fucking building, and there were some hijinks there. Like, there was... I remember the review. I'm not stupid. Like, but, like, if you said to me, Dave, take us shot by shot through fucking Last Jedi again, I'd be like, I barely remember anything other than how it ended. I'd be like, oh, I'm all over the end. I remember the end well, where Luke, spoilers, kids, fades away. And Dave, seconds before that happened, thought, oh, it's half sweet, he's going to survive. And then it was like, oh, why is there a sunset? Oh, this isn't what I expected. I remember that. And then being like, the strange dissatisfaction going through my body as it cut the fucking credits.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
Though there were scenes after that.
Oh, no, who can remember that?
Like multiple scenes after
can,
that in the
who
movie.
Who can remember them? You know, but I mean, that was some time ago. Now, Stu, I've got a question for you. I haven't finished with my questions on this topic.
No, can you give me a good question?
There's a lot of talk.
Because you've had some mediocre questions.
There's a
so
lot
far.
Of talk about when a trailer will drop for episode 9, uh-huh. along with footage and a trailer for The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Do you think this could be a Star Wars celebration on April? The trailer for
quite possibly. That actually fits. Episode 9 would normally drop a trailer around May.
Yeah.
Generally around 6 to 7 months out from release.
But they've got to do something in celebration. It's a 5-day
event. Yeah, I mean, there's a big Star Wars celebration. There's also, I mean, May the 4th is kind of the unofficial Star Wars Day.
Yeah, true. But do you think celebration, I think, has taken that over now? Like, that Disney are backing celebration pretty heavily. They've got The Mandalorian coming, the Disney Plus service to fucking promote. There was talk today, I think, or in the last 24 hours, that Bob Iger is going to be doing stuff about the Disney Plus service. It's getting sort of a soft, not a launch, but they're giving like a lot more information to investors about it.
Yep. That makes sense. I mean, look, and the timeline fits.
Yeah.
It is a little early.
Sure.
Considering the movie's not out until December.
There's some talk that we'll see a full episode of The Mandalorian there. Like,
ooh, that's big.
Well, look, that's talk. I'd be surprised.
That's a lot of talk.
I think you'll see, like, footage.
I imagine we'll get it.
Some people at Jedi Council are getting very excited about the whole Star Wars thing at the moment. Like, it's starting to build up a lot of heat.
Look, we've got a good list of projects on the horizon. So they should be getting excited.
I'm excited. I mean, I'm literally on the Facebook page now. I'm scanning for news all the time. Like, nothing's getting by me.
Lots getting by me, Dave.
I don't check that often, actually.
Yeah. I can name a few things that have gotten by you, Dave.
I check in once every 2 weeks. Actually, there was a really sweet thing of this girl. I actually felt quite sorry for her. She came back from school. She was only like 8 or 9. And she wears like one of these schools in the States where they can wear like their own, you know, casual clothing. She wears like Star Wars t-shirts and stuff, and she was being bullied. And like, so she was, her mother was filming her on like, you know, the phone and posting it to the page saying, like, if any words of advice and like smart comebacks to the bullies, you know, because this poor girl's coming in and like getting bullied. And I didn't really have anything to offer, but it was quite a heartwarming story. That's the only one I can remember so far. I don't know if that was news.
No, it's not. Thanks for sharing the story, Dave. But
yeah.
Still not sure why you shared that story.
Well, I was just trying to impress upon you that I'm on the Facebook page now.
And not participating.
Well, I know. I said, aw. I did, aw.
Take it all back. I'm sure she feels better.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. I'm sure I solved the problem, probably. Stu, got a little bit of a think piece for you here. Tom King on the Walmart deal. You know how DC are releasing stuff to Walmart? You know, in the collected editions and all that kind of stuff, like the 100-page editions with some reprints, some new story stuff. Who is little John Suntress, and he was saying it's a tiny audience, it's a vacuum. And he was basically caveat on that was saying, like, that's giving him a lot more freedom to, you know, do different stuff with. But story-wise, but is it really a tiny audience like Walmart? Like, to me, I would have thought that would be an enormous audience.
I mean, the amount of people in Walmart is massive, but the comic book deal with Walmart, it's not huge.
Small. Yeah, you think it's small?
Yeah.
I would have thought, I was thinking it could have been the equivalent of the sort of their...
Remembering that these books are going to be sold exclusively at Walmart.
So far. There's talk that they will be collected, though.
Possibly, but it's still not a case of, like, you get the Walmart audience, plus you get the
regular
normal comic book audience and the online audience, and you're just getting
Walmart. I mean, because DC aren't releasing digital review copies of these. Like, I'm not getting the digital review copies of these books. I actually asked Dusty about it the other day. And Negatory. It's like the way I said negative. I changed it up. I've got a whole new bag of tricks this week. Have you noticed? Like, so much for the Dave that says, what's the point of going on? I've actually found a bit of life. Life in the old dog yet. So, you know, Weekly Comics, Stu. Oh, I've got a teaser announcement as well before Weekly Comics.
A teaser announcement.
Ready for this? Get ready for this, Stu.
By the way, this is something that Dave has absolutely not talked to me about at all.
No, well,
so we've got no idea what's going on.
Yeah, okay, get ready for this, Stu. It's related to Adam the Computer Crouch,
okay.
Firstly. It's a Signal spin-off show. Adam the Computer Crouch and I are going to be doing, get ready for this, Stu, a monthly... potentially flexible, but like monthly aim, Starman review over the entirety of James Robinson's Starman. And we're going to be doing one-shots, all sorts of stuff, and we're going to go not issue by issue, Stu, because I know that's what you were thinking. It's going to be like 3 to 4 issues in a clip, and we're going to be recording shortly, and there's going to be... It's a single spin-off. Et cetera, et cetera. So, Stu, I think this is huge news for listeners. I have done some pre-release hype to a couple of, like, loyal listeners. And obviously, Adam the Computer Crouch is a you know, big fan of the show and a great listener and regularly corresponds. And, yeah, I just wanted to announce on the show that there's going to be a Signal spin-off coming. More details to come, basically. But, well, yeah, it's kind of cooking. Are you excited, Stu? Over there? Have you read Starman?
No, I haven't.
So you can hop on at the start of Starman, and you can be part of the reading experience too.
I think I'll just read it. I think I'll just read it.
Well, that's
thanks,
fine.
Dave.
Yeah, but you're going to read it 3 or 4 issues a clip along with the show.
I get enough of you already without exposing myself to more Dave.
Oh, what? You're saying you're not listening to our show? Come on, it's a single spin-off. You can be, you know, at times part of it as well if you want to be. Like, anyway, the point of the story is. That I just wanted to announce it to listeners. There's been a bit of hype on it. There has been. Like, some people have been buzzing on the fucking page about it. And out of the Computer Crouch, I feel like this is a young guy who's just chomping at the bit, Stu. Like, almost like a... He reminds me of, like, Stu in his younger days, when he had a bit more hunger in him. Like, 99 episodes with me, you know. I see the old dog... a little bit more tired now, a little bit more cynical.
And yeah, I've crouch. Lost that gleam behind the eyes. I just kind of phase out when Dave starts monologuing.
But get this, the final thing I'll say, though.
Good luck, Adam. That's what I'm taking away from this. Really good luck, Adam, because you've got the heavy lifting in this job. I hope you're aware of this. No, Adam.
No, I was gonna say,
Adam has the heavy lifting.
Adam's already broken up the whole reading order of everything, because I didn't.
Yeah, Adam, as a note, Dave won't stick to it.
Yes, I will.
He'll read 70%, forget half of what he's read, and show up. He'll be there on time. I'll give you that.
Well, that's important during podcasting.
Punctuality is a big
get
thing.
Get ready for this. Okay, this is why we're doing 3 or 4 issues an episode. It's a slow, deep dive. And by that, I mean we're going to tune fucking in. You know what I'm saying? It's true. Like, instead of just the casual read, like normal, like churn and burn stuff, which I do, this is kind of like, let's start processing. Let's start thinking.
All right, so you're going to read something and actually remember it.
And think about it as well. Like, write notes down.
Adam, you're asking a lot. You're asking a lot from Dave right now.
Yeah.
These are 3 things that Dave doesn't do lightly.
I can't read. I'm looking forward to it. Like, and even today, when I was reading the comics for this show, I was trying to apply that kind of like, let's go beneath the.
And did you get there? Did you get there?
Go beneath the surface, yeah, a little bit.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, like yes, I did. Thank you.
No wonder you were stressed out and screaming at people at work today.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know what else there is to say. Now, have we announced, before we get to Week of Comics, should we announce what we're doing in episode 100?
We can now that you've said that.
Okay, fantastic. Episode 100, Stu and I are doing the book that was voted number 1 in the poll that we did, The Dark Knight Returns, considered the linchpin of the industry, Frank Miller. There was a few being tossed around, but we felt Dark Knight was kind of the summation. The other one that we got very close and really only time has prevented us was we were definitely thinking about Nightfall Volume 3, and that will be coming in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you're aware, we're recording the show later in the week.
Sure.
So we've only got a...
Blame Stu.
Yeah, blame me. Go for it. So we've only got a short week between now and episode 100, so sure. We're going with quality over quantity.
Not something I
4 issues of gold.
Not something I normally do.
No. Dave's all about the quantity.
Quantity.
Yeah.
Content, I call it. Content. Yeah. But this time...
Seriously, Adam, you really want to reconsider. Just
81 issues due of deep dive. Deep dive plus some one-shots. I mean, he's going to be reading text pieces and stuff.
Probably. He's going to be ready to kill himself.
Letters columns, Stu, getting into the letters. I mean, yeah, it's gonna get intense. I mean, just the thought of my brain sounded like kind of frazzled and cook. You know,
see, he's read 0 and he's already cooked. Adam, you're getting into deep water here, buddy. You reconsider. I'm begging you, reconsider. Reconsider.
He's all pumped. He made a financial.
We need you for the show. We need you for the show.
He made a financial commitment. He purchased the entirety of Starman in single issues. That's what sparked my brain into action. Like, you know, I saw this figure and I was like, dots started connecting in my head. And I was like, yeah, it's time for a single spin-off. I mean, every successful show has a spin-off. It usually fails. But I thought, like...
I'm glad you said that, not me. Yeah.
NCIS, NCIS LA, you know, Law and
NCIS
Order.
NCIS New Orleans.
Yeah, but we're not focusing on the spin-off of the spin-off. Yeah. We're doing the spin-off. Mm,
yeah.
Anyway, enough about that. And so we'll be doing Dark Knight Returns. Now we are in Weekly Comics. We are officially in Weekly Comics. I got excited before.
Yep. Blue is low early. Now we're moving on.
We're kicking off with Justice League Annual 1. This was a very big cosmic issue. Actually had Starman Will Payton, who's the Starman before James Robinson Starman, in it. This was a big picture story, Stu. I wasn't sure if it was exceptional or just very strangely run-of-the-mill. I didn't know what to make of this issue. I found it interesting, but I didn't sort of, like, emotionally engage. What did you think of this one, Stu?
I quite enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's fast-moving. It's got a lot of my favourite characters in there.
Yeah. It's got a lot of characters.
But, I mean, it's a Justice League annual, so it's going to have a lot of characters.
Sure.
I love Brainiac being there. I thought that was a really cool touch.
Yeah.
Anything to do with the... Source Wall is always going to be kind of wacky and cosmic.
And all that ties back into the Dark Multiverse guys that created the Kraken.
Yeah, the Dark Knights metal run.
Mm. were still churning off that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Green Lanterns had been creating like a sort of like Band-Aid solution.
Yeah, they're trying to hold it together with pure will. That's cool.
The only thing I will say, although I appreciate the big picture nature of it all, I just didn't emotionally connect. You know, I just there was part of me that felt very distant from the storyline. I don't know what it was. Sometimes Batman in space loses me. I still sometimes see Batman in space, and
always feels a little out of his depth when he's in space.
Yeah, I'm still like, what are you doing, Batman? Like, could you not have handled this from the back computer? Like, I don't know. I liked this issue. I certainly didn't love it, and I don't like that it's just all the, like, I hate it when it's all like, tune in to, you know, series such and such to see how this wraps up.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the point of these issues, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
It's to try to branch off readers that are only reading one title and to force them into others.
True.
So if you read, like, The Dark Knights, you're going to, like, wind up into this because it's the continuation.
Sure.
Or probably the conclusion of that kind of source wall story.
I mean, people were saying online, like, this is the death of the multiverse, of the death of the multiverse that Morrison created. Did you see it as such?
I understand what they're saying.
Because it's kind of at the end, they're sort of predicting that, aren't they?
Yes, but look, we all know that there's going to be other ways around that.
Yeah.
Like, this is a comic. Nothing ever dies in comic books, right?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's a famous saying, no one ever dies in comic books.
It's all keep reading the next issue.
Exactly. Right? So the fact that the multiverse looks like it's dead means that they're going to bring it back in another event in a year's time, maybe.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not upset that that's...
And don't forget, Grant Morrison is running Green Lantern as well. So,
yes, he is. So they've already got the mechanisms to... The
chance of him sort of...
Let him bring it back.
Yeah. I'm not fully up to date on his Green Lantern. I've read the first two, but I've got another issue to read. It's getting great reviews. But, yeah, look, I mean, I gave this a 7.5 out of 10. I did enjoy it.
I gave it an 8. Well, yeah, it's enjoyable, right?
Good issue. Then we had X-Force 2. Look, I don't know how to describe this. It's schlocky fun. It's certainly like we just went very cosmic. This is very sort of like just classic, sort of not quite street level, but army focused kind of militaristic X-Force. For what it was, I quite like this, even though I find the art a bit jarring. I still enjoyed this issue, and I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. I actually thought this issue worked on a lot of levels, and I'm not the biggest X-Force fan, but I still liked it. What did you think, Stu?
It got a little repetitive.
Sure.
The idea that every character is now questioning whether Cable's a good guy or a bad guy, or the right Cable.
Or the same Cable, yeah.
Yeah, that got a bit old.
Sure.
Deathlok was basically just a machine at this point. Like, just...
What did you think?
Like, he was a walking Siri. That's what he was at this...
Yeah.
I don't know, I
quite like Deathlok.
I'm a little down on this title. I don't think it's a great...
Okay.
The artwork's cool. I
call the artwork. Title itself throwaway comics. Like
yeah,
read and sort of forget.
You know? Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, for sure. That said, that used to be a lot of comics I would enjoy in the 90s. I would read a lot of DC and sort of you wouldn't really ever read it again. You know what I mean? There was a certain level of DC in that period that was fun to read, but it certainly wasn't something you sort of remembered very long. This felt to me like... almost bargain basement Marvel. You know, like, if they were selling this comic for a dollar, I reckon they'd be a bargain.
But yeah.
They're not. They're selling it for, like, what, $4, Stu? I don't know. I'd be interested in knowing how X-Force is doing sales-wise, because this doesn't scream... There's nothing really novel about this X-Force story, would you agree? Like, it's very sort of, like, it's almost predictable?
I mean, look, there's places we could go. Like, they had the kind of teleporting mutant that showed up to the general...
Yes.
Who was, like, warning of something bigger and then just got blasted to death.
Yeah.
And the corpse got thrown back through the
and portal. They've got the guy who says he's a hunter and is torturing the mutants and stuff.
Yeah. Like, there are some cool threads here that they could absolutely make into a really cool story.
Yeah.
And this might just be a slow start to what is considered a classic in the future. But
yeah,
right now I'm kind of borderline, do I read the next one?
Yeah, well, I was borderline whether to include it, and I just did because I knew we'd read the last one. I mean, I gave it a 7. What did you give it?
I gave it a 6.5.
It's fair.
It's enjoyable, but I'm kind of... I wouldn't read it unless we find out there's more to it.
Yes.
Nice. If you're on the fence, I think this one's a miss, unless we get to episode 5 and everyone's going, amazing must-read series,
yeah,
then go back.
By the way, I just want to mention, it was either this week or last, that Heroes in Crisis came out, but I'm storing it up so we do it as a trade.
Yep.
Now, the last one this week was Journey into Unknown Worlds. Another one, issue one. Another one similar to last week, which was a horror sort of anthology.
Yeah, this one was like a campfire.
Campfire story. Sort of like little horrors. Look, probably not as good as the one last week, but I still found this very enjoyable.
Not quite as good, but very close.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually found this really fun. In that it was like a campfire story inside a campfire story inside a campfire story.
Yeah, I know.
And each one kind of the horrors just bled through.
Yeah.
The artwork was stylized, especially that first story.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Where they were kind of getting mutated out from that virus.
Mm. Yeah,
that was crazy. Stunningly visual. Like, that was brilliantly done.
I love that these horror stories don't feel the need to have a happy ending. Like, I like that they finish like that. With that sort of
open,
I mean,
horror? Look, this ended like a campfire story should.
Sure.
Like, it ends with that threat of, is it real?
Yeah.
And you kind of, you're meant to leave the reader going, oh, shit, I don't know if that's a good ending or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what a campfire story should do. And this is, yeah, this was a perfect version.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'd give this a 7.5 out of 10. And, I mean, I hope that these titles sell. I wonder if the kids are still picking this stuff up. Like, I mean, my first comics of all time were literally horror comics that were in show bags. Seriously. I'm not even exaggerating. And they were pretty much my first comics I ever read. And I used to pore over them because I just was so sort of taken by the medium. Yeah. And, you know, I still remember them. I wonder if kids are picking these up. Like, that's the question, Stu. Do you think people are marching in to stores to pick up these? Like,
no.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they're super sellers. I don't think they're super popular. It'd be interesting to talk to Jim.
Yeah, actually, find out how these do.
How some of these subgenres do.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, we still have horrors, we still have westerns and romances, and
sure,
they're much smaller market shares, like significantly smaller market shares.
And they're not on newsstands like they were back in my day. You know, when I was growing up, you would still get these on newsstands. Even though superhero comics were the biggest sellers, these were there as well. Now, I will ask Jim about that, about how these Marvel sort of like little anthology single shots are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know. Now, Stu, our trade of the week this week, was it your pick?
It was one of mine.
Cloak and Dagger, Bill Mantlow on writing duties, Rick Leonard on pencils, Terry Austin on inks. This is a very, I think, powerful story about Cloak and Dagger.
I was not expecting this level of depth when I picked up this book. Because I read this a week ago.
Sure.
So I kind of picked it up knowing that there was a TV show.
Yes.
So clearly there was enough there to make a show.
Yeah.
But I'd seen the trailers for the show and it was very young teen.
Well, I've watched a fair few episodes of the show.
Drama kind of.
Yeah. It's kind of this short story done modernized. Like, yeah, it's quite similar.
But then I picked this up and it's so much darker than I was expecting.
It's bleak.
Like, it's the origin. I've never had an origin story that was this dark.
Yeah.
Where, like, people are scrounging for drugs and willing to inject themselves with anything.
Yeah.
And they happen to hit, like, a serum.
It paints a scary picture of early 80s New York.
Yeah.
Really dark picture.
Yeah, really dark.
Bill Mantlow was a talented guy. It's a real tragedy what happened to him. He had the brain injury in the car crash.
Mm.
He had a lot of good Marvel work. Was a lawyer as well in real life. Actually was like a full-on lawyer. Very, very talented guy. In fact, so talented that what I've read of his, I've sort of always gone, serious weight.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is a beautiful snapshot. The art's incredible, too.
The art is amazing.
Like, the art hooks you
in. The way they play with that light and dark.
Yeah.
With the cloak and dagger. Oh. Whereas you'll often just see an outline of the characters.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well done.
And the grimness of the New York sort of, like, urban decay that was going on, and, like, the detective and the way she was depicted. Like, there was a sort of griminess to the art, which you don't see in these books very much.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, when it was John Schnepp, before he passed away so sadly, that brought this book up when they were about to do the show, and I always, for some reason in my head, confused Cloak and Dagger with Power Pack. I thought they were like Power Pack, you know, Kitty Kitty.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that Cloak and Dagger were like the Kitty Kitty, and then
I leaned younger in my
yeah.
like estimation as well. Like, I wasn't expecting it to go this adult.
John Stepp was talking about this, going about how it's all about drug dealers and their killing. And I was going, what? And it just so happened that when Marvel had that massive Amazon sale of like a dollar comics, he spoke so highly of it that I saw that and thought, well, fuck it, I'll pick this up. We'll do it on the show at some point.
Yeah, and it was probably around that time that I bought this thing. Yeah. I bought a little hardcover trade.
It's so good.
It's really surprisingly well done.
Yes, and there's leading stories that were in my collection, which is actually quite large. It has the four issues we did. It has a lot of lead-in Spider-Man stuff, because it's what they
Yeah, so I read the... Because, I mean, Cloak & Dagger's very first issue was a Spider-Man issue.
Spectacular Spider-Man, yeah.
And I read that Spidey issue, where Spider-Man's kind of stumbling on them and trying to capture them, but really unsuccessful.
Oh, yeah, he's totally out of his league, really. And mentally, they're so far ahead of him in terms of what they're going to prepare to do. Like, these characters are remarkably cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Like... It really is...
I felt like this was a nice lead out of something like The Punisher.
Sure.
Where Punisher's very much...
Sure.
Kill or be killed.
Sure.
And this is definitely still killers on the table.
Oh, yeah.
But they're slowly starting to lean out of that into maybe I shouldn't have to.
Yeah. Oh, the question is definitely there. And it's posed by the priest. It's posed by the detective.
But it's a very real question.
Yeah.
Like, when they pose that question in, like, a Spidey comic...
Yeah.
You know that it's always going to end up with Spidey not choosing to kill.
You know Spider-Man's not going to pick a gun up and shoot someone in the head.
Exactly. He never gets there.
Which is fine. That's the character.
It is. But there's never any threat there.
No.
Whereas here, when Mantlo starts threatening that, it's a very real threat.
And let's face it, they do it as well. It's that's what I appreciate about this. Cloak and Dagger have killed.
Yeah.
And do kill throughout the series. There is a moral question that they pose, but... I didn't expect myself to really... It's written in that 80s style, but very well. I really fell for the characters. Like, I felt like I learnt a lot about Cloak and Dagger inside four issues. Like, I was like, this is actually a really good snapshot of these characters.
Especially their dynamic with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
How the two of them are kind of almost parasitic.
Yeah, they need each other.
Where they absolutely need each other to survive.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, she can't... She has... That light's bursting out of her, isn't it?
The light's almost burning her up.
Mm.
Whereas he's kind of struggling to survive.
He's full vampiric, isn't he, really?
He is. He feeds on life force.
Yeah. And he tries to target basically flat out, like, bad, bad criminals.
Yeah.
But he's tempted by, like, the bums. You know, like, he's got serious temptation
to just absorb someone that won't be missed.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I've encountered my fair share of Cloak and Dagger over the years, but only very tangentially in events.
Yeah, I've read them as part of a bigger story, like an Avengers run.
You never get to the heart of them, do you? It's just always about his
Cloak's clothes. Used quite a bit as like a teleportation.
Yeah, he is, yes.
Mechanic.
He was used in even Secret Empire, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's been used a lot. Then there was one or two stories... Where I think all of New York was plunged into darkness.
Yeah.
For a long period of time.
Sure.
And Dagger would climb to the top of, I think it was the Empire State Building, and just emit as much light as she could to try to maintain daylight.
Really?
Yeah. And she was like killing herself trying to make sure the heroes had daylight to kind of...
She's very much a pure heart,
maintain some kind of normalcy.
That's interesting. Look, I mean...
But it's very rare that you see them... In big events. Like
And I dare say they struggle to hold down a title. But they're an interesting character.
For a limited series like this, it's a really great dynamic to work with.
Yeah, look, this is one of these occasions where I feel like the writing is at the top of its game and the art is at the top of its game. There's a lot of love poured into the artwork by this, what was his name, Rick Lennard and Terry Austin on inks. Now... I want to say that again, like, Bill Mantlo delivers a really great snapshot of basically very early 80s New York coming out of the 70s, like, which was crime-ridden, et cetera, et cetera. We've seen it explored. But tying in with some artwork that just really sells it. I actually would give this a 9 out of 10. I actually felt very, very good. Better than I expected, and like a weird snap... Like, it just... I really fell in love with the characters. It was kind of more than the sum of its parts, if you know what I mean. I expected this to be a decent story, but... But I and the Spider-Man stuff, I was like, yeah, this is fine. You know, this is good, fun.
Yeah.
But then I got to the limited
series. But it was much lighter in the Spidey. Yes, for obvious for sure. reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of went, okay, there's a cool story there. Like, there's the bones of a good story there. Yes. But it wasn't grabbing me.
I can imagine this gripping readers at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and it being quite... Because this was before Punisher had Circle of Blood, which came in about 86. This is about 82, 83.
Yep.
It's very much in the same sphere. Slightly more sort of dialed down to the teen market, like, you know, 12 market. But I still think this was... I reckon this would have lit up readers at the time. Yeah. I would almost say that this was probably more of a shock to the system than we're probably giving it credit, coming from our 2019 angle, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're actually a little more generous than I only gave it 8.5.
Well, that's
fair. But I still think it's a very, very good read. I would highly recommend...
Me too, me too.
...picking this up. It's a little four-issue run, so it doesn't cost you anything.
No. And it's
it cycles through sales periodically. If you can get a digital copy...
Good, grab it.
It's well worth it.
And, like, you get a lot out. It's a rich four issues.
Mm.
Like, as I like comics at this time, there's wordage, but there's great art as well. So it's a very rich read. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's actually something I actually savored in it. Like, I found myself kind of quite drawn to the material.
Yeah.
And, yeah, look, the best you can do is you walk out of it thinking, man, what a fucking series, and, wow, I really appreciate those characters. And I felt like I learnt a lot from it in a weird way about those characters. Like, I found them, their appreciation, because, I mean, I didn't feel one way or the other about them. My appreciation for them was very high. Yeah, really found myself falling in love with those comics. It reminds me of when I read, like, David Michelinie's Spider-Man and stuff. I just find myself, like, dialing back to that time, and I just feel like, wow, I want to keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great read. I certainly recommend it to listeners. Now, Stu... That's been a fairly big show. Have we got... We've obviously done the teaser announcement that I'll be rolling out we had in the computer.
Yes.
Episode 100 is coming that up. News. Episode 100 is coming up next week, Stu.
Yeah, next week. I mean, so this week.
This even. Week for us, really.
This week, even.
Jesus. I've got to read 4 issues by then. Dark Knight. Dude, I've read Dark Knight probably 20 times. How many times have you read Dark Knight?
I think maybe 3 or 4.
I honestly reckon I've read 20 to 25 times. I reckon I've read the first issue of Dark Knight maybe 50 times. I used to be able to quote it. Like, I'd walk around the house quoting it. And just,
I mean, look, I'm looking forward to it. Like, I think it's... I don't think we could have picked a more fitting episode 100.
No, I think it was great timing. Read. Great timing.
I think it has worked out nicely.
Yeah, it definitely. Now, look, guys and girls, if you want to sort of, like, chime in with thoughts, comments, obviously hit us up, signalofdoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page. Send us any messages. follow the collective on Twitter.
Yeah, Dave will try to read anything you send him. Say try. He'll get your name butchered to all hell.
Michael Kellish, just, I've read out so many emails.
I know, and you still can't say his name.
Whatever. I mean,
just butchered.
I've read out, like, so many damn emails in my time. I welcome it, Dave. What?
I'll read anything.
I won't read anything.
I will. Let's just take that back.
I will.
You will. You'll anchorman your way through a show. No problems. But let us know what you thought of the first 100 episodes of The Signal.
Sure.
What,
the first 99.
No, okay. We'll read it out next week. Put it this way. It's not going to be a game-changing new format next week. No, let's be entirely honest. It's going to be very similar to 99, but maybe a little bit more 100-y.
Yeah. Bring it up the 100, man. Bring it up with a single.
Let us know what you thought of the first 100.
Sure. Write in with who's your favourite
host. Let us know what you wanted to do for the next 100.
Write in with who's your favourite host and remember, okay,
yeah.
Who runs the social
remember
media.
Remember, Dave page. Is spelled STEW. That's how Dave spells his name.
Who runs the social media page and there is a gatekeeping process in hand. Okay. So, like, you know, I screened. Believe you me, I screen.
Oh, God. I believe that.
On that note, good night, kids.
See ya.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
to stand there to drink my wine, plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. To get excited, the thing be kind of slow. There are many here among us who feel that life is but a joke. But you and I, we've been through that, and this is not our fate. So let us start talking falsely now. The hour's getting late. Kept up you while all the women